This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run!
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde! Intercepted! Tre Day! Tre'Davious White!
He's in trouble. He is sacked. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there! McCoy, much to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hey, hello there. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Friday on the show. We always love the Friday shows during the regular season, of course, because we're getting ready for a game and because we're getting ready for the weekend here. Good afternoon to you. Welcome to the show. John Murphy joined by Steve Tasker, former Bills special teams ace. He's on the Bills Wall of Fame from the NFL on CBS, in for Donald Jones again today. Good afternoon, Steve. Good to be with you.
Yeah, Murph, good to be back. I had fun yesterday.
Did you?
Yeah, it was good.
It's the third show you've done this week?
Yeah, it's been a busy week for me.
Yeah, good for you. We're glad to have you.
Yeah.
We are going to the Combine next week. Steve's not going. Myself, Donald Jones, will do the show here Tuesday. No show Monday for us. It's going to be a hockey day because of the hockey trade deadline Monday. So the instigators, Petey and Reve, they will be here all day, basically, all day on Monday from noon until 3. Tuesday, we're back in here, Donald and I, noon to 3. Tuesday night, we head to Indy, and then next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, our shows come to you live from Indianapolis Convention Center and the 2018 NFL Combine. Have you ever been to a combine as a player, as a media guy?
No, but when I came out of college in 1985, it was the second year of the combine, and I wasn't good enough to get invited. And, I'm sure it's evolved over the years, no question, but I'm kind of glad we get a chance to talk about it today because it's a lot of fun to talk about, and it's because these kids, these young players, are going through a lot and getting ready for it, trying to focus on it, and it'll be fun to see. It's always fun to watch because these guys are under the lights for the first time together.
You were not invited as a player, though, and you got drafted.
I did.
Sixth round, around there? Seventh, eighth round?
Ninth round. It doesn't exist anymore. It's 226 overall is when I got drafted. So that, still guys are still they draft about, 350 guys?
Okay.
I'd have been an early sixth round pick, sixth round pick.
Were you surprised you did not get invited to the combine?
No, I didn't. I didn't think I'd get drafted either. I knew that I tested out physically pretty well. I mean, I had a fast 40 time. I could bench press, I could bench press a house. I could jump high. I mean, I knew I had some measurables that worked pretty good because I'd worked very hard to make it so. But I didn't think I was, I still thought I was some little kid that wasn't going to.
So you, but all along, you thought you were going to the NFL, combine or not, right?
I thought maybe that I'd get a chance. As a junior, as a senior, that I was going to redshirt that year. I went in, they had the scout day where the scouts came in, and a pro day was different back then. You had all your players, all the seniors would come in. And I was at Northwestern University in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
So all the seniors would come in and say, hey, we've got three scouts coming in today, and all this, you guys can come out and run for them. And I went out and ran for that.
Did well?
And I did, and one of the scouts goes, oh, wow. I snapped off a 4.41 40 or 4.43 40, and hand-timed, of course. And the guy goes, oh, wow. He goes, you're going to be with somebody next year. And I was like, what? And that motivated me. I started working really hard then because some guy had given me that.
But no invite to the combine?
No.
Okay.
No.
But here's the combine now is really the first of the preeminent events leading up to the NFL draft, and we're going there next week to do shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. We want to talk a little bit about combine today. We're on the show coming up today at 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup will join us. He is deep into his work looking at the video of the quarterbacks, and we'll get with his take on some of the quarterbacks in this year's draft. And coming up at 2 o'clock, the man who runs the combine, the CEO of National Football Scouting, Jeff Foster, will give us an idea of who's invited. But we wanted to look at the combine from a global sense, Steve, and who's going there and what teams are looking for when they talk to these players. There are, 300-plus players being invited to the combine next week.
Yeah.
They'll have, medical exams, physicals. They will they'll look at all these players, look at their physical status. They will test them for various things. They will put them on the field, run a 40-yard dash, a high jump, run these agility drills, lift weights. They will meet with them at night. They have 15-minute meetings with players at night. From a standpoint of what teams are looking for, that's how we want to approach it. And even in terms of the Buffalo Bills, our Twitter poll today deals with, if you were running a team, an NFL team, what would be your focus? What would be at the top of your page when it comes to meeting these players in the Combine next week. On Twitter, we put the question out to you there. If you're looking at the Combine, what's the most important thing that you would look to do for a team if you were going to be a team? And we want to hear from you on Twitter what you think it is. We also want to hear from you on the telephone line, 803-0550, the number to call, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. But on Twitter, our question, what part of the Combine should be valued most by NFL teams? What part of the Combine? 58% of you say the one-on-one interviews would be valued the most in your mind. 22% say the on-field testing. 16% say medical tests. 4% have something else in mind. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. If you were a general manager, which part of the Combine would you value the most next week at Indianapolis? One-on-one interviews, on-field testing, medical tests, or something else? Give us a call, too. 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. I know the one-on-one interviews are important, Steve, but they're brief.
Yeah.
They're 15 minutes.
And the guys are rehearsed and coached up.
Yes. I would say medical tests would be my, you know, yeah. Especially with guys who might have a medical question or guys you're not sure about their health or a particular injury, their recovery from a surgery or an injury. To me, that would be number one.
Certainly, that's number one for some of the guys, maybe not all of them. But I think one of the things that, and we were talking about this, I think it's a chance to see all the top players in the college ranks together on one field, particularly at one position or another. And you get some guy like who's from, you pick it, from UB. And he's on the field at the same time with guys from Alabama, LSU, Clemson, UCLA, USC, all these, and Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State. For the first time, that kid, that UB kid stands up next to those guys, and you get to see him side by side by that. So it gives teams a chance to say, you know what, the kid from UB is physically way more impressive than any of these other guys. You know, we got Khalil Mack is the guy. You know, this guy can really go. Look at him next to these guys. And when you see them run these drills, Khalil Mack's better than all these guys. Yeah. He's faster. He's quicker. He's more explosive. You know, that's the guy. And the first time you get a chance to compare them side by side with the same model year coming out. And I think that's where the teams, you know, we hear so much about mock drafts. It's not a mock draft. It's the top 100 players ranked from 1 through 100. And that's what you're – and they rank these guys. And I want to know the difference between the number 10 guy and the number 11th guy, because if there's a wide gap, you need to know that when you're on, when you got your board going and it's on draft day and you've got those guys and you think, you know, the guy that was still in those top 10 guys is still on the board at number 15, you kind of got to take him. So I think that's where it's valuable to me about the draft, about the combine, is that you get to see those guys compared side by side, small school, large school, physical attributes against physical attributes, height and weight, strength, size, agilities, everything side by side, and you can rank guys within a position group as to who you'll draft before you'll draft the other guys.
And yet they already have that rank. They already have, I'm sure, going up in the in the draft room right now here at One Bills Drive is a board, you know, a listed board. Now, that's not going to, you know, necessarily remain as is. They'll change it around, but they've already got those prospects ranked, I would think.
Yeah, that's true. One other thing it helps you do, though, that goes deeper into that is, all right, and I was you talk about, like, the top three defensive tackles that are available. There's five defensive tackles that are draftable that have the measurables, and they're going to get on the field and say, you know what, these guys are going to get a chance to play. Here's the top five defensive tackles. I want three of those tackles, but if those three tackles are gone, there's two safeties that I want before the fourth defensive tackle. Or there's a wide receiver that I'll take, or there's two or three guys at different positions that I want. If those three top guys are gone, then that position goes away from me until the third round, kind of thing. And then you bring other position groups into that spot. Because, but if one of those three tackles is available at the pick you're projected at picking, you're going to take him no matter what. That's those three guys, they're going to help your football team, and those are a position of need and they're top quality talent. So you get to rank the positions you get to cross reference the positions by saying, listen, if one of the top two tackles is there, we're going to take him. But if they're gone and this wide receiver's there and this safety's there, we got a decision to make about that. We may take one or the other, depending on how these interviews go and how the combine goes.
Let us know what you think about getting ready for the combine. What would be your number one priority if you were an NFL team? What do you think? Would it be the medical exams? I think that's number one. Would it be the one-on-one interviews, 15-minute interviews at night? They sort of just bang them out one after another after another. Would it be the tests, the on-field tests, the 40-yard dash, the you know, how many times you do the bench press, How many times, you know, how long does it take to run through the cones? You know, all those drills they do. Would it, if you're looking at quarterbacks, would it be the throws that you see in the combine? Let's know what you think. Lines are open, 803-0550. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Your number one priority if you were running a team when you went to the NFL Combine next week. Lines open at 803-0550 and toll free, 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker in studio with us today, all day. Hey, Steve, this is a non-combine issue, but obviously it plays into where the Bills are at and what the Bills thinking is going into the combine. And that's Tyrod Taylor. The news came out after we went off the air yesterday. Comments made by Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. Nothing really is new here. Nothing really has changed. But Rappaport, appearing on NFL Network, talked about Tyrod Taylor, said the Bills are not planning to cut Tyrod Taylor, at least not yet. Here's what he had to say on NFL Network yesterday. Ian Rappaport from NFL.com and the NFL Network.
At this point, it doesn't seem like they're going to cut him without knowing who the replacement is going to be. So they're simply not going to get to the start of the league year when he has a $6 million roster bonus due and just say, all right, cut him, move on, we'll find the next quarterback. That is not going to happen. And as far as it is explained to me, the Bills are okay with paying the $6 million roster bonus for Tyrod Taylor just to keep him on the roster, and then we'll see. They have a couple options here. They could release him after that. More likely, they could try to trade him as the quarterback needy teams get very active during the start of the league year and that whole period in a couple weeks. Or they could keep him and maybe during the draft, if they snag a quarterback there, could trade him after that. When they do pick up the $6 million roster bonus, Mike, all it is a one-year $10 million contract, much more tradable for the Bills.
Ian Rappaport yesterday. So, you know, I don't know that there's anything new there, Steve, but it's. I think the fact that it came out yesterday indicates that someone here, someone at One Bills Drive, or maybe someone acting on behalf of the folks here at One Bills Drive, wanted to get the word out there that Tyrod is, you know, we're open for business. If you're interested in Tyrod Taylor, we're now a week away from the combine, a little bit less than a week. We are now less than 3 weeks away from free agency. If you're interested in Tyrod Taylor, basically, I think the Bills are saying, make us an offer. Let's see what you
got. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, too. And it puts a team like Cleveland back into the mix for trading for Tyrod. Not in fact that they want him to play, but a guy who's been active, who's been a good quarterback. You're going to take a cap hit a little bit, but that's certainly a tradable, particularly if they're going to draft a guy high. They can bring Tyrod Taylor in and let him start and mentor the guy and let the kid watch him, and then when you move away from Tyrod, you can transition away from him. That's a trade that Cleveland could make, and it makes a lot of sense for the Buffalo Bills too. And Ian Rappaport said it as succinctly as you can. You ain't going to move on from Tyrod unless you got somebody better or as good to replace him. And right now, I don't think they believe they do.
Tyrod Taylor, the Bills not planning to release him. They will. You know, right now at least, they want the word out there, and Ian Rappaport puts the word out there that that $6 million roster bonus due March 16th, the Bills want it known that, yeah, they'll pay that, but they'll be open for business. So, interesting. I think the Bills trying to set it up. You know, we talked about how, you know, the Alex Smith trade was one big move. Cousins coming out in free agency going to be another big move. And I think the Bills are showing that let's get going here a little bit, right?
I think so.
Let's get the dance going with all of these quarterbacks who are available to go and getting ready to move.
I agree. It's a smart move by the Bills, too. If some team is willing to do it, and even if you get a sixth or seventh round pick out of it, you know, that's more draft capital. You don't mind throwing an extra fifth or sixth round pick onto the deal to put them over the top of actually making a deal to get a top five pick or wherever they want to move up or down or backwards. Draft capital is gold in the NFL, and there's just no way around it. So you got to know that the Bills are keeping that option alive for themselves by saying, listen, we're not going to get rid of Tyrod until we have his successor or we have a plan in place or we get some assets in return. And if you want him, you can get him. And let's face it, the cap hit aside, you're getting a pretty good, proven NFL quarterback who has limitations, no question about it, but who's a great teammate, who's got all this stuff going for him in the intangibles column. There are teams that are, hey, I'll give up a sixth round pick for that guy, and he's going to be our backup, or he's going to be our bridge quarterback until this young quarterback that we're drafting is ready. He got a team to the playoffs a year ago. We've got a better defense than Bills had last year. We've got, you know, stuff going on that makes us think we can duplicate what the Bills did a year ago because we've even got a better defense, and we think with our draft picks, our run game's going to get better. So
we're in a position to take Tyrod, do better than the Bills did when they made the playoffs, and go from there with a rookie quarterback that we draft high and can move to after Tyrod's done.
What makes it interesting to me, among other things, I guess, is that you're talking about a guy who teams would look at as not a starter. You know, most teams, when they're out there looking for quarterbacks this time of year, are looking for a guy who can come in and start. When it comes to Tyrod, I don't know that teams are looking at him like, well, that's our answer. That's the guy who will start for us. And so the Bills, in an effort to get, I guess, kind of force the issue and to see what's out there, to kind of gauge what possible trade options are out there, you would think, and again, I don't know this, but you would think the Bills fed that information to Ian Rappaport to have him put it out there and say, yes, the Bills are not planning on cutting him. They're hoping to trade him. But you wonder if teams make their move on a backup or a number two quarterback before they, you know, make their move on a number one.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's a smart move, too, because you know what you got and you know what his cap hit's going to be. And he's only going to be, in my scenario that I'm putting forth, is he's going to be a bridge quarterback for a team like a Denver, like a Cleveland, like mm-hmm. even the New York Jets. I mean, you can go anywhere, take it anywhere you want, even Arizona. He's a bridge quarterback for a one-year deal. And if you let him go, if you wait until the Bills cut him, he's going to cost you more money to sign, I think, than he would less, because then you're going to have teams bidding against you. A sixth-round draft pick for a bridge quarterback working into a starter for one of these teams that are already know that they're already in the – maybe even the guys in the top five, like a Cleveland or an Arizona who's looking to move up or what have you. I think it's a perfect scenario for them to get him as cheaply as they can, but get him. Don't let him go on the market, because then you're going to have to pay more for him.
Ian Rappaport says the Bills are not planning on cutting Tyrod Taylor, says they are ready to, by March 16th, pay him that $6 million roster bonus to keep him on the roster, but they are also interested in talking if someone wants to make a deal. Your thoughts on that or the combine, whatever you think, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Steve Tasker's with us till 3 today. Call here from Charlie on the west side. Go ahead, Charlie. You're on the air with us.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Great. Thanks, Charlie.
Doing good.
The question I wanted to ask, last year McDermott and Brandon Bean, they did it the first draft. They did a very good job. They brought players in here that want to play football. They have to keep that up in this year's draft. They have to look at the players, their attitude, the personality, if they want to come here and they want to play in Buffalo. And I think we're going to be all right with the draft, getting players regardless of the position. If we get some good players, they have a good attitude about playing here, I think we're going to be okay. And I needed to ask a question about Corey Glenn now. I mean, we have these young tackles, young tackles that they're not making the money he is. They're going to try to put them in the lineup. Do you see someone like him, if the Bills were to talk to him about restructuring his contract and let him play the last 2 or 3 years here in Buffalo at a guard position? Because I help the line with the running game. And if Buffalo does let him go and trade him, I know he's going to go somewhere else in the NFL. He can help any offensive line he goes to. And that's all I got to say, guys. And he's have a nice weekend.
All right. Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah, it's a good move. I mean, you got to talk to Cordy Glenn and ask him if he's willing to restructure his deal and make it possible for you to keep him. Or restructure his deal to make him more attractive if you think he's going to be here. But that, you know, all that stuff that Charlie brought up about restructuring and moving him down to guard, if you've got Deion Dawkins who's going to play your left tackle for the foreseeable future, all of this stuff, all of that is dependent on what Cordy Glenn wants to do. None of us can speak to that. I mean, Cordy Glenn may say, no, I'm a left tackle, and that's where my money's going to be made. I'm going to make my career there. You're either going to keep me here, pay me like a left tackle, or you're going to trade me and somebody else is going to pay me like a left tackle. I would anticipate that would be more along the lines that he's going to say. But it depends on the restructure you're talking about, too. If you give him a little bit more money guaranteed than he's going to get now, under the same and with a more cap-friendly hit and extend him out, maybe. I don't think the player would do that, though.
No, I mean, he's getting paid left tackle money. If I'm Cordy Glenn, I want to play left tackle because that's the money I want to make. Now, Cordy Glenn, I don't believe – my feeling is, he's not going to be the left tackle here, Steve. I think he's going to be out there as a potential bargaining chip for the Bills to make a deal, maybe to get more draft picks, maybe to get something else. But I view him as an asset that they're going to want to use sometime in the next couple of months. We talked about his contract yesterday. It is manageable for a left tackle. You know, his money is high, but it's left tackle money, starting left tackle money. Based on what he's done, he's been a pretty good left tackle, and you're going to have questions about his injury and, you know, how ready he is to come back. But I think they're probably hoping they can get someone to bite on Cordy Glenn as a solution for them at left tackle, and there are teams that need left tackles. and help get a better draft pick or help get somebody else in the draft.
Yeah, he's an asset. There's no question about it. He's a good player, very solid left tackle. He's under a contract that's not out of line. But he's also on a team playing for an organization that already has a young left tackle that is not going to have his deal redone for another 2 or 3 years and can play and show that he can play left tackle in the NFL. And that means Cordy Glenn is a guy that you can either – I mean, you don't need two left tackles. You only need one.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Now, it was nice to have – to find out about Deion Dawkins and find out that he can play because Cordy Glenn was hurt the entire year. I get that. And you do need depth on your offensive line, but you don't want you're not going to sit Deion Dawkins down. And you may move him to the right side and put Cordy at the left, and then you'll be set for a while, no question about it. But by the same token – left tackles are harder to find than right tackles. And you may be looking for a right tackle, but you don't want two starting left tackles. You need, because you can get something.
You don't want to pay him, number one.
Yeah, but you're not going to have to pay him as long as Deion Dawkins is on his rookie deal. So no question, it's a little bit of a conundrum. But I think in a season where the Bills have a need, a lot of needs, you need to cash in some of your assets that you don't want to bench or that are a little bit more than, you got an abundance of wealth at left tackle. You got to cash it in and make your roster better around everybody, whether by quarterback, whether in the draft, whether getting draft picks or whatever. I think it's a smart move and it's an obvious move. It doesn't mean it's actually going to happen. Just like the Tyrod Taylor thing we were talking about yesterday, we still don't know if we believe that he's going to be the quarterback here in Buffalo this next year, even if they do pick up that $6 million. But by the same token, it's the same scenario here at the left tackle. It looks like a smart move to use him as an asset to get yourself a player that you really covet.
What should the Bills' strategy be at the combine? Which part of the combine should be valued most by NFL teams? That's our Twitter question. It is up right now. You can weigh in on that at 803-0550 or toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. And what about Tyrod? Has this changed your thinking much? The fact that the Bills announced that they are not planning to cut Tyrod Taylor, they are prepared, they say, to pay him that $6 million roster bonus by March 16th and maybe entertain offers then. Give us a call. The lines are open. Here is Dave calling from Cheektowaga. Go ahead, Dave. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm not in favor of keeping Tyrod Taylor to use him as, trade material or, something else, because I believe all the other teams in the league have already seen his capabilities and his weaknesses, and no one wants to sign him. Otherwise, I think the Bills would already been taking phone calls from people. And I don't think that I want him to tutor a potential college draftee, because I don't think he has enough strengths that I want him teaching them anything. Thanks, and I'll listen for your comments.
Yeah, I don't know, Dave, because I'll tell you this. The Bills probably know what they've got. Tyrod Taylor, don't kid yourself. I mean, he's a veteran guy who shows a lot, and he's tough to defend for a lot of people. So there's people in other teams who think Tyrod Taylor has something to offer. And we're not saying that the Bills are doing this, but I would be shocked if they hadn't, don't know exactly what Tyrod Taylor is worth out there. And if he was worthless, they wouldn't be keeping him. They would release him and let him sit out in free agency until time, and then ask him to come back for minimum wage. I mean, they pay him what the market will bear, and they know the market will bear a lot more than that. I think that the Bills are very aware that Tyrod Taylor has some value to the NFL, and some team is going to want him.
I think that's what this Rappaport story is, the Bills' attempt to kind of flush out the teams. Do you have an interest in Tyrod Taylor? Let's hear from you. What are you thinking? I'm not saying they're going to make a deal before March 16th, but I do think in the 3 weeks between now and then, by releasing, by feeding this information to Ian Rappaport, having him out there saying they're not going to cut him without knowing who his replacement is, the Bills are attempting to, get somebody to stand up and say, well, we could be interested in Tyrod Taylor. Maybe he's our guy as a backup or whatever.
I don't know. I think they already know that their team's interested. And
how would they know that?
They call them.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of phone calls that go on, a lot of conversations that go on. I think, and plus, even if there wasn't a direct conversation, I know that there are people in the organizations that cross talk just because they're friends. And the Bills have a handle on exactly what the value of Tyrod Taylor is to teams around the NFL. And they know he's – and despite what Dave, our caller, just said, that he's, they wouldn't ask – he wouldn't ask him to tutor a young player. He wouldn't – he thinks other teams know what they are, and he's worth – he is not worthless. He is a team, he is a player that teams worry about when they play the Buffalo Bills. He really is. They don't like playing against him. He's difficult to defend. Now, on the Buffalo side, we know there's some limitations. There's some things he just won't do. But when you're playing against him, he seems like a valuable asset to your opponent. And that gives him value around the league. And I think the Bills are very attuned to that. And they're not going to let him go unless they explore every option about wringing that out of his contract and whatever he is worth. Because I, unlike the caller, Dave, who just said, you know, the guy, you think, and I don't, think that if the Bills release Tyrod Taylor, that he is not going to be in the NFL next year.
Oh, he'll be playing.
He absolutely will be in the NFL next year, and that's why you want to have a team who's what somebody willing to pay to make sure he's not a free agent.
Let's go to Scott in Tonawanda. Go ahead, Scott. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thank you, guys. I hear a lot about quarterback, and I understand that, but I want to ask you guys, how important is it that we get a top-flight wide receiver? I mean, I can remember watching games and the commentators saying that, you know, that we have nobody to throw to. Are there any good guys coming out of college? And what do you guys think about this, getting a really good wide receiver?
Well, after just talking about Tyrod Taylor and how he had such value, one of the things, they were 31st in the league in passing, and that wasn't because they didn't have wide receivers. You can call in and you can tell me I'm crazy. You can do it. Listen, I watched games with the Buffalo Bills. Tyrod had problems hitting open guys in certain areas of the field, most notably over the middle. You've got guys, the receivers were open a lot more than they were getting the football. I don't think that we had Sammy Watkins on the team, who's a great talent. Now, he had his issues and stuff too, and he did really splash when he got out to L.A. But you had Robert Woods, who had a phenomenal year for the L.A. Rams, and he was here with Tyrod. And was a gritty, tough player, and made himself valuable. But I do not believe that a wide receiver was suddenly going to be the magic elixir that makes the Buffalo Bills even 25th in passing in the NFL, let alone top 10. It's not that guy doesn't exist. But I get it. If there's a wideout out there, you've got Kelvin Benjamin, who's a big, huge target and has the ability to do some things nobody else can do. You've got Zay Jones, who notably still needs to develop, but started to, I think, late in the year as he played more and more and more. But I think there's room for another great wide receiver on this team, no question about it. The question is, who's going to pull the trigger? And if you get him, is that guy going to be able to, you know, help that kid develop by giving him targets and stuff? Because Zay Jones, quite honestly, I don't think he got enough opportunities to catch the ball. Now, he struggled early in the season with his drops. I mean, if you remember that, Murph, you were calling all those games. Yeah. He dropped the ball a little bit, but that's, you know, that happens when a young receiver comes. You got to stick with him. I'm just saying, yeah, I get it. Don't blame the lack of production in Buffalo's offensive passing game on the wide receivers. And I know I'm an old wide receiver, so I'm a little biased. Mm-hmm. I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it. Not from what I saw, not from the film I've watched, not from the coach's tape, not from the broadcast that I've watched the Bills, not from the live games that I've watched the Bills. A wide receiver is not – the lack of wide receiving talent is not the reason they were 31st in passing.
All right, we're talking about the Bills, obviously, with the Combine next week. What should Buffalo's approach, what should their philosophy be in the Combine? What would your philosophy be if you were running an NFL team? And your thoughts on this news that Tyrod Taylor, Bills are not planning to cut him before March 16th. According to Ian Rappaport of NFL.com, the Bills are going to pay him that $6 million roster bonus to keep him on the roster for now. Your thoughts on both of those items when we return. The lines are open, 803-0550, and toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show. Steve Tasker's here. We're here until 3 today. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We are coming to you live on this Friday afternoon from One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker is here for Donald Jones. Thanks for filling in again today, Steve. We appreciate it.
Love being here, man.
We do not have a show on Monday. It is NHL trade deadline day. And the boys, the hockey boys, the instigators will carry the show for 5 hours on Monday. We're back on Tuesday and then at the Combine on Wednesday. Our Twitter poll today deals with the Combine. If you were running an NHL team or an NFL team, if that was your deal, if you were Mr. NFL team, what would be your top priority going to the Combine? We offer a couple of suggestions on Twitter. Right now, 58% of you say the part of the Combine you would value the most would be one-on-one interviews. 22% say the on-field testing. 16% say the medical tests. 4% say something else. Give us a call. Talk about that. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or you can do it on Twitter at John Murphy Show. This note from comes up today from the National Football League. Chris Ivory, released today by the Jacksonville Jaguars, former 1,000-yard rusher just 3 years ago with the Jets, signed with the Jaguars in 2016, never became their starter, averaged less than 4 yards a carry in his two seasons there. He's a free agent now. Chris Ivory is going to be 30 years old next month, which is kind of a landmark for running backs, but Chris Ivory is available. I don't know if he interests me, Steve, as a backup here.
I mean, he's a quality back.
He was.
He turned into a quality back for Jacksonville as well. But Leonard Fournette certainly took over the lion's share of the carries. And Leonard Fournette is the real deal. I mean, he's like a Saquon Barkley to me.
Yeah.
I mean, he is for real. And that's why Ivory was expendable. You're not going to pay a guy that kind of money, particularly. And I agree. While we found here in Buffalo with a guy like LeSean McCoy how important the running back position can be, and we've seen it in other places with the emergence of Alvin Kamara around the league and running back, the young running backs in the league who have done Ezekiel Elliott a couple of years ago, these young running backs coming in and splashing right away, while as important as those guys are and as exciting they are to watch and as important they are to those teams winning, there are guys like that around. Now you get them in the third round, the fifth round, the undrafted. So you can find guys who are quality players without overpaying them, particularly if you've got a lead dog like a LeSean McCoy or a Leonard Fournette or another back, any other back you can name, Todd Gurley out in L.A. If you've got that guy, you can find a guy to back him up to carry the ball 10 or less times a game
yeah.
and be really good at it.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
I mean, if he's the right price, sure, he's a quality guy who has played extremely well in the league and been able to carry. And plus, if something happens to LeShady, you don't mind sticking him in and starting him for a couple of games.
I guess so. Here is Sid in Medina. Hello, Sid. Welcome. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Have we lost sight of the fact that new offensive coordinator Coach Dable has a rich background in the read option, and he's been successful where he's gone with it? It seems to me like Tyrod might be a guy that could be valuable running the read option. Look what it did for just a mediocre quarterback, Nick Foles, in the playoffs. Tyrod's got a gun, but he's not the tallest quarterback. He needs to get out on the edge where he can do some more damage. And for God's sake, don't keep running him into the left sideline where he's got to throw all the way across the field to complete a pass.
Yeah,
right.
Or he doesn't have room to complete a pass running into the left sideline. I think he could be useful in the read option, and maybe Coach Dable is the one that's talking to Bills management that maybe we ought to keep him and try to groom him for that.
Well, here's the thing, Sid. There's two things you're talking about here, and I get what you're saying, and no question – Brian Dable, new offensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, probably believes he can get maybe more out of him than Rick Dennison did a year ago. But here's the thing that you got to know. What you're talking about is the read option that Dable has used and everything. That's not what Nick Foles ran in the playoffs, and that's not what's kind of taken the NFL by storm. It's not the read option. It's the run-pass option. There's a big difference there. The read option is a one where it's a run play and the quarterback either gives it to the running back and takes off running himself with the ball or gives it to the running back and fakes the run his own. It's where he has two different runs to pick from. What is taking the NFL by storm right now and what the Eagles use so well and what Nick Foles runs so well is the run pass option. That's different. That's if a defense gives you a look or does something at the snap, you can either give it to the running back or throw it down the field. That's very, very different than the read option. The run-pass option, I don't know that I've seen Tyrod run. I don't know if Brian Daboll has that. I'm sure that they can run. They've seen it. They've studied it, and they've probably tried to apply parts of it to their offense. Everybody does that. It's kind of a copycat league. But you're talking about two different things. But to start your call out, Sid, you're right. There's no way Brian Daboll didn't come in here thinking he can't coach better than the guy that was here before. And Rick Dennison, they all think that.
Sure.
That's just the way they're wired. So he probably is looking at the film and saying, well, I don't know why they didn't do A, B, and C. And the problem with that is, for most of us, we've seen it that what he's talking about just doesn't work. A, B, and C doesn't work either here in Buffalo because we've tried it.
I mean, you can't get around. Sid, I know what you're saying. I see what you're saying. You're looking at a passing offense that was near or at the bottom of the league for a couple of years in a row. You can't get around that. You know, you can do other things. You can, if they have to, if they wind up with Tyrod as the quarterback this year, which I think is unlikely, you can put together something that might work and get your team moving a little bit, run the ball. But I just think they are ready. I feel like they're ready to turn the page. They've had 3 years of Tyrod Taylor, know what he provides, and they'd like to get better. I think they'd like to get better. Jeffrey in the Falls calling. Jeffrey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, what's happening, fellas? How y'all doing today?
We're doing great. Thanks, good. Jeffrey.
So happy that you guys gave me a phone call. And I disagree with you a little bit, Murph. I think it's time to hold on to Tyrod Taylor. If you're going to draft a quarterback, Tyrod Taylor at his contract price and his abilities is going to be, and his extra personality is going to be the perfect person to mentor a young quarterback. If you're going to go out, draft a free agent, you're going to pick a free agent up, then you get rid of Taylor. But if you're going to keep him, I don't think he's in the top 20 quarterbacks in the NFL. Statistically, it might not say that on his passing, but really talent-wise and his abilities are not that horrible. You're going to cut your nose off to spite your face if you get rid of him before you determine who is going to play that position. You're going to go from a position of weakness to an even bigger, weaker position.
Well, Jeffrey, is there anybody out there that you know of that off the top of your head that would be an upgrade from Tyrod Taylor in that regard, in any regard that you're talking about? Is there somebody that you would sign, despite the fact, I mean, I'm not talking about Kirk Cousins or Drew Brees or those guys. I'm talking about somebody maybe that is middle of the road.
No, there's nobody. Fitzpatrick would not be an upgrade. Everyone might say, hey, we brought Fitzpatrick back.
What about A.J. McCarron?
No, A.J. McCarron does not have a volume of work. If A.J. McCarron was so good, why couldn't he beat out
Andy Dalton?
Yeah, why couldn't he beat out Dalton? It's not. I mean, Tyrod plays hard. He's not the greatest quarterback. He has his limitations. But he doesn't necessarily win football games for you. He doesn't lose football games for you either.
Jeffrey, you scored 10 points in a playoff game at Jacksonville. Did Tyrod lose that game? No, but he certainly didn't. He certainly didn't help, right? He didn't help. They scored 3 points.
They scored 3 points.
3 points. They couldn't even get to 10 points. Got to score a touchdown. And that's part of that's on him.
I understand, Murph, but who are you going to bring in outside of the draft? You draft a quarterback. We don't know who will be available to us. We don't know what we can get. Who are you going to bring in off the street that's going to be a better quarterback than him?
Well, I'll tell you, you're right about a couple of things. There are certain things Tyrod does that are better than anybody. He's great at converting third downs into first downs with his legs.
Doesn't turn it over.
The team was in top six in the NFL at doing that on third down. He doesn't turn it over. He's one of the best in the league at not turning it over. But I'll tell you this, there isn't a free agent quarterback I can think of that is in the top 10 of the free agent quarterback list that would not be better at throwing the football, and the team would not be 31st in the league passing if they traded him straight across for Tyrod Taylor. I think 10 of them would be able to throw and put a passing offense together better than what the Bills were able to do with Tyrod Taylor. That's the issue. Now, if you're willing to go forward knowing that if you can upgrade your defense, if you can keep your running game as solid as it's been for the last handful of years and improve in all those other areas, then, yeah, you can. Tyrod is a great viable option because we've seen that the team can play well enough in those situations to win. But by the same token, there are a bunch of quarterbacks who throw the football and run an offense, a passing offense, better than Tyrod does at this point. And Tyrod's an 8 or 9 year guy in the league. He's been around for a long time. He is what he is. And it's, you know, I don't care if Brian Daboll's his offensive coordinator or Josh McDaniels is his offensive coordinator or whoever, or Adam Gase in Miami, or you can go across the whole league. It doesn't matter who his offensive coordinator is. Tyrod Taylor is exactly who he's going to be. And if you're going to get better, you've got to change. And that's fundamentally what we're talking about. Now, no question, you don't want to change. I'm with you in one respect, Jeffrey. You're not going to change until you've got a better option. So yeah. Until you get a better option, hang on to him.
And, Jeffrey, you're right. You know, it's drafting a quarterback, I believe, which should be part of the Bills' plan this year, whether it's the big move up for one of the top ones or sit where they are, 21, 22, or even second round. But there are some free agent chances, chances for the Bills. Kirk Cousins, unlikely he's going to wind up here. Drew Brees is still an unrestricted free agent. Unlikely he's going to move. But, you know, Sam Bradford, isn't he an upgrade? You know, yes, there are health questions. Teddy Bridgewater. Steve spoke highly of Josh McCown yesterday. A.J. McCarron, Chase Daniel. There's guys who can play. You think, Steve, you're saying that virtually every one of those names I mentioned would be a better passer than Tyrod Taylor? I think you'd have a hard time disagreeing with that. Yeah. I think anybody would.
The team was 31st in the league in passing.
Yeah.
And that was after being, 32nd the year before?
31st
again, yeah. the year before. That's just not good enough.
No.
And the team made the playoffs despite that. Now, the one thing that Tyrod does give you that is absolutely invaluable that every young quarterback should look at and think about as being an asset, not a liability, Tyrod never, and I'm not saying never, I'm just exaggerating, never turned it over.
Right.
I mean, they never cost the Bills a game with a turnover. Never. Now, they lost some chances to win games because they did or whatever, but the guy never turned it over. But on the same token, they left a lot of big plays on the field because he wouldn't pull the trigger, too. So that's a double-edged sword. And this last year, the season they put together was good enough to get him in the playoffs for the first time in a long time. So Tyrod proven that it's possible to do it with his ability and his skill set. So, I know the Bills hung on to him, and I would agree, and they said it yesterday. Why get rid of him until you have a better replacement? But I think they're out there.
Tyrod due a $6 million roster bonus third day of the league year. That would be March 16th to go along with the $10 million base salary that he would get. He restructured his contract each of the last 2 years. He is already on record as saying he will not do that again. And Ian Rappaport saying yesterday it doesn't seem like the Bills are going to cut him without knowing who his replacement would be. Rappaport said the Bills are okay with paying a $6 million roster bonus to keep him on the roster. I view that as a signal to anybody interested, make us an offer. We'll keep him. We'll pay the $6 million, but make us an offer. Let's see.
Yeah, and good for Tyrod. He shouldn't have to restructure his deal if he doesn't want to. I mean, he did it twice.
Yeah.
And he was whatever you want to call it, good soldier. He took a hit for the team, but he was making good money. I mean, there's no question about it. He earned the money he got. He was right in his wheelhouse of it. He was getting value. But I think Tyrod's smart enough to know this, too. And we had one caller earlier, I think, who said, you know, Tyrod, get rid of him. You know, nobody's going to want him. They know what he is. No team wants him as a mentor. I disagree completely with that. I think there's a lot of teams that know the value of Tyrod Taylor. And I think Tyrod knows it too. That's why he won't restructure this deal. There are teams out there that will give him a chance to compete, maybe for a starting job, but for sure give him a spot on their roster so he can and making good money doing it. So, yeah, he's right in saying for his future and all that he's done, hey, I've done enough, you know. If it's not enough for you guys, I'm sure it's going to be some other teams want to give me a chance to make it enough for them.
Want to hear from you what your next move would be with Tyrod Taylor for the Buffalo Bills and what you would go to the Combine looking for. What would be top on your list as far as goals, things to accomplish at the Combine next week? We'll take a break. We'll take more phone calls when we return. It is the John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. Steve Tasker with us till 3 today on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back at One Bills Drive, John Murphy. Steve Tasker is in for Donald Jones today, and we have no show Monday. Coming up at 1 o'clock, just about 15 minutes away, 10, 15 minutes away, Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL Matchup will join us. Start to look at some of those quarterbacks in the draft. We're talking about quarterbacks, Tyrod Taylor, talking about the combine a little bit as well. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. Tom is on the phone from Grand Island. Go ahead, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
I got three quick comments I want to make. One about Tyrod is I think what people need to realize is there's a 48-hour legal tampering period between, right, like March 14th and 16th and before the clock hits midnight, right?
Right.
So they could very well probably find his replacement beforehand. And I think what they're trying to do is, you know, like you said, Murph, they're trying to, you know, gauge teams' interest in him and see if they want to trade for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes good sense, Tom.
It makes, yeah. So that's my opinion on that. And I got two comments about the combine. I think the one-on-one interviews will be really good, for especially for a player like Baker Mayfield, who's my favorite in the draft. Whether you like it or not, I think it's really unfair that he gets comparisons to Johnny Manziel, but I think the one-on-one interviews could possibly help him out, with, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, he could prove that he's not that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Tom, let me just bust in on you. I appreciate that. It's an interesting insight, and there's no question. I think Murph and I agree that the personal interviews are really important as well, but let me tell you, I just read today, there's an article out about some of the, in past years, what has gone on. I think we'll all agree that maybe Teddy Bridgewater turned out to be a better NFL player than Johnny Manziel. But in the times leading up to the draft, Johnny Manziel was wowing people in his personal interviews. He had charisma. He had spunk. He had courage. He was confident. The guy knew what he was talking about, and he killed it in his pro days, too. He was throwing the ball well. He, remember, Johnny Manziel wore his helmet and shoulder pads on his pro day when he threw. He had great workouts at the combine. He did a lot of good things leading up to the draft, and everything pointed towards him, and they liked his spunk and his interviews and all that. Teddy Bridgewater, on the other hand, didn't perform well at the combine, did not perform well at his pro day. His personal interviews did not go well. He did not seem like a confident and well-prepared kid. And yet, after all of that, Johnny Manziel is a train wreck, and Teddy Bridgewater was going to be the franchise quarterback of the Minnesota Vikings, except that he got a devastating knee injury that's kept him out of the league or off the field for almost 2 years. So you can say all you want about, you know, and I get it. Baker Mayfield is not Johnny Manziel, but don't be fooled by that. I don't care. He's got to be, no question he's got to be better than Johnny Manziel. I don't care if he's entertaining in those meetings. You got to find out about him, no question. But I'm telling you what, you don't know because they've all been coached up. That's the problem.
You have another, the third
Tom,
point
sorry,
you
yeah,
want to talk about.
Go ahead, Tom. I didn't mean to break you off.
Oh, no, that's fine. I also, there's a running back I really like out of Arizona State. You know, his name's Josh. I don't know if you guys have heard about him. He had a pretty good Senior Bowl. I think he's a guy that can benefit from, like, the combine workouts and stuff. Maybe, like, he's seen, in my opinion, as like a day three pick, but I think if he has a really good combine, he could shoot up to like a day two pick. So
give us his name again, please.
Kalen Balazs, I think.
Okay.
He's pretty good.
All right, we'll look him up.
All right, we'll look him up.
Thank you, Tom.
Check the running back class. Really good.
Yeah, Kalen Balazs, yeah.
We'll look him up. Thanks, Tom. Hey, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk more about Tyrod Taylor. We'll talk more about combine, but excuse me. Do want to get into some of these quarterbacks in the draft, and we're going to talk with Greg Cosell from NFL Matchup on ESPN. He has done a lot of his homework on these quarterback prospects, these draft prospects. We'll dip into it with Greg Cosell when we return. So come on back for that. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by NEPA Auto Parts, coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Got the update from One Bills Drive. The Buffalo Bills don't plan on cutting Tyrod Taylor, at least according to Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. Rappaport says it seems like the Bills are not going to cut him without knowing who his replacement will be. Bills, according to Rappaport, okay with paying a $6 million roster bonus to keep him on the roster. Taylor due $6 million on the third day of the league year by March 16th. That would go along, $6 million to go along with a $10 million base salary in 2018. More discussion on that coming up. Tampa Bay Buccaneers have released veteran kicker Nick Folk. He played in just four games in his one season in Tampa. He beat out second-round pick Roberto Aguayo for the starting kicker job, but then lost his job to Patrick Murray. Jameis Winston, Bucs quarterback, has been cited for careless driving. He was involved in a minor collision in Tampa. The Buffalo Sabres got an overtime game winner last night with 0.2 seconds left on the clock, a 3-2 win in Detroit against the Red Wings. Evander Kane scored his 20th goal of the season in the win. Sabres move on to play the Washington Capitals tomorrow night in D.C. Faceoff scheduled at 7. Buffalo home Sunday, 5 p.m. against the Boston Bruins. Germany upset Canada in the semifinals of Olympic hockey, a 4-3 German win over Canada in the men's hockey semifinals. The Germans move on to play the Russian Olympians for the gold medal now. College basketball, Purple Eagles of Niagara go for their 19th win tonight, concluding their regular season. They play Marist tonight, 7 o'clock at the Gallagher Center on the Niagara campus. And the NCAA, the FBI, has announced details of an investigation about rules violations uncovered by corruption in the sports. The documents show that cash advances of entertainment and travel expenses played for college basketball prospects and their families. Schools identified include Duke, Carolina, Texas, Kentucky, Michigan State, USC, and Kansas. At least 25 players also linked to those reports. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in for Donald Jones today as we come to you from our One Buffalo studio. Joining us on the hotline right now, our regular Friday guest, has not been with us for about 3 weeks. Happy to have Greg Cosell on the line. He is the executive producer and analyst for ESPN's NFL Matchup, longtime senior producer at NFL Films. Greg, good to be with you. It's been, 3 weeks since the Super Bowl that Steve and you were talking down in Minnesota. Good to have you on the air today.
Yeah, it was great to be with Steve in Minneapolis, and it's really good to be back with you, Murph.
You have switched your attention, I'm sure, from the Super Bowl and that matchup to what lies ahead, the Combine next week. We want to talk to you about that. We also want to talk to you about Tyrod Taylor, who we ask you a lot about. The report came out from NFL.com yesterday that the Bills say that they are willing to pay him that $6 million roster bonus around the time of the league year beginning on March 14th. What do you think is going on here, Greg, and what do you think the Bills' strategy is?
Well, I don't know what their strategy is, but and I know Steve can really appreciate this, but the way it works in the NFL is it's always easy to say a quarterback is not very good or he's not exactly what you want. The issue arises, guys, if you then don't have anybody to replace him. And that's what teams face. It's always easy to say Tyrod Taylor's not the answer. And I think that the Bills know that. My guess is a lot of teams around the league would probably say he's not the long-term answer for a team at quarterback. But if you don't have one, you know that he's a professional starter. You can line him up and you can play. Now, you need a lot of other things throughout the rest of your team in order to compete. But keep one thing in mind. I believe the Bills made the playoffs this year. And who was their starting quarterback?
Yeah.
It was Tyrod Taylor. So it comes down to if you don't have one, you know that Tyrod Taylor can line up. You know, I always use the expression, guys, and I guess it's funny. I don't know. But, you know, if you don't have a girlfriend, they all look like a 10. And Tyrod Taylor can line up and he can play quarterback for you.
What do you think, Steve?
Well, it's just right. I mean, unless there's a better option, you got to hang on to him because that I think at this point there's no quite. Even though we were talking about Nate Peterman and we've had fans call in and say, hey, let's go with Peterman and give him a chance for an extended time as a starter or bring him into camp as the starter. But let's face it, even if you bring Peterman in, he's got to be acknowledged as a downgrade from Tyrod Taylor. And nobody wants to go down. They want to go forward. They want to go up. And if they take a step backward, even with a drafted quarterback, they want to think that this quarterback's got a bigger upside than Tyrod ever had. So, yeah, he's right. I mean, they're going to stand pat until they have an upgrade or a higher ceiling at quarterback.
Greg, when teams – and I want to get to these rookies in a minute here – but when teams look at Tyrod Taylor and look at what the Bills did, don't they look at him as a potential number two quarterback? I mean, is there anybody outside of the Bills seriously looking at him as a possible number one?
Well, I think it comes down to the same thing we just spoke about. I don't think anybody in an ideal world as an absolute in evaluating just the player separate from a team looks at Tyrod and says, he's my guy. But if you don't have one, and it's between Tyrod and lining up with a total unknown that's a pure projection, then Tyrod is a better option. And for a team that looks at the rest of its team and says, hey, we have a really good defense. We've got a back that we can lean on, and we can give him the ball 17 or 18 times a game and feel that we can control the pace and tempo of a game. Then Tyrod Taylor is a quarterback you at least feel you can line up with. But Murph, as an absolute, no, I don't think anyone looks at Tyrod and says he's the guy.
What if a team like a Jacksonville Jaguars, who are kind of so-so on Blake Bortles or maybe not sold on Blake Bortles, they can't jump up high enough in the draft this year to get one of the top guys? Do they use Tyrod Taylor and or maybe a Cleveland Browns or a Jets as a bridge quarterback to a guy they have drafted or a guy they're trying to develop?
Well, I would think, Steve, that Jacksonville would look at Bortles as similar to Taylor in that sense. I mean, look, they made it to the AFC Championship game, and they featured a back and a big-time defense. So they're essentially built to have a quarterback who doesn't need to be a high-level producer. So I don't think – I think they would see Tyrod Taylor as very similar to Bortles.
Right.
So I don't think they would make that kind of move. I think if Jacksonville were to make a move, they'd be interested in either drafting a guy that they thought had a higher ceiling, so to speak, you know, to start using draft terminology, a higher ceiling than Bortles.
With Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN. Now, I know you've spent the last couple of weeks looking into these rookie quarterbacks. It's been said that this is a really, really good group of rookie quarterbacks. Greg, what do you see? How would you compare this this group coming out this year?
Yeah, you know what? The one thing I don't do, Murph, which is very hard for me to do, is to compare year to year. I mean, there's always a couple of guys that I remember. Like, I don't think there's as good a prospect in this draft as Carson Wentz was when he came out of North Dakota State. So I would say that. You know, I think someone like Josh Rosen probably compares very favorably in terms of his skill set to someone like Jared Goff when he came out of Cal. You know, Darnold's a little bit of a wild card because Darnold is he's a very tantalizing player. He's by no means a can't-miss player in my view, but he's an exciting, tantalizing prospect who needs a lot of work in certain areas, and I'm sure he's getting that. I know he's working with Jordan Palmer, who I know well, and Jordan does an outstanding job with quarterbacks. He worked with Deshaun Watson last year. But, yeah, Darnold's probably the guy that is – I guess he's the guy people look at as number one. I think he needs to be coached really well and really hard.
What is Darnold missing? What does he need coaching on, Greg?
Well, I think that his delivery from top to bottom needs some retooling as far as his mechanics and fundamentals. His footwork and balance need major work. He's, you know, the way I would describe him, and this could be a positive or a negative, he's a baller much more than a disciplined, nuanced quarterback. There's not a lot of precision to his game, and that carries over to his accuracy. His ball placement tends to be erratic. He can be really precise, or he can miss some throws that by NFL standards would be viewed as routine. But his size, his ability to throw from the pocket at times, his movement, his second reaction ability, that will get people excited.
Yeah, we've been talking a little bit, too, about the combine and what's important about it. And from your perspective, I know you're not going to be actually in the room, or you'll probably be hanging around down there at least. But
oh, I will.
Yeah,
I'll be hanging around.
What do you think is the most important aspect of the combine for teams, on generally speaking? I know everything's important. You can find out pretty good nuggets about in the medical exam, the physical activities they do, and also the personal interviews. I mean, he's sticking to those three topics. I mean, what do you think are the telling things that teams can find out about players that, I mean, you know they're going to be coached in those interviews. You know they've been coached to run a good 40. You know they've been coached to, you know, do everything right. So how do you sift through all of that?
I think the interviews, though, Steve, and I know players are coached, but I think that you can work through that. And I think for a quarterback in particular, I think the face-to-face is so important. Because, again, watching these quarterbacks throw in shorts and a T-shirt, specific routes to receivers they're not familiar with, you know, unless it's an extreme, unless you look at a guy and go, wow, he really can't throw. But if it's mid-range stuff, I don't know how much it tells you. I personally am a big believer in the tape study as far as the physical part. So I think with a quarterback in particular, you really want to get a feel for him as a person and for the other things that go with what playing quarterback is about. I mean, you know, Steve, I mean, you got a chance to play with someone like Jim Kelly, and I think the force of his personality was probably, I don't want to say it was more important than his physical talent. You would know way better than I, but I think that that probably meant a lot. And I think you try to get a feel for that kind of thing with a quarterback because that's very important at that position.
How important is it to compare them to the other guys in the same draft class that are playing the same position?
It's absolutely critical. You know, to me, you start with what's on tape. Because the funny thing about when the college season ends and we go through the combine, we go through all this draft stuff, and we get to the draft, is everybody changes their opinion and nobody's played any more football. So, right. You know, that's why, to me, I start with the tape. And again, it doesn't mean that my evaluations are all going to be right. There's a human element here. I'm wrong, you know, just like the next guy is wrong at times, obviously. But, you know, you have to start with what you see the guy do on tape, and then you have to decide how he fits in what you do. Because one thing I've learned over the years, coaches coach what they know, and offensive coaches think of quarterbacks in the context of their offense. So that's the way coaches look at it. They think about their offense and how this player fits with the skill set and the traits and attributes they see on film.
With Greg Cosell, executive producer, analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer at NFL Films for some 38 years. You talked about Darnold. Tell us about Josh Rosen, UCLA, what you've seen of him on tape so far, Greg.
Yeah, Josh Rosen is actually, you know, again, maybe I'm a little old school and I'm trying to step out of that sometimes with the changing nature of offense, both in college and actually in the NFL. But Josh Rosen, to me, is the most refined quarterback in this draft. He has very clean footwork. He throws with a firm base. He repeats his mechanics over and over. He has an easy, natural throwing motion. You know, I mentioned that he's similar to Goff. You could make that comparison. A Matt Ryan comes to mind. I think Josh Rosen is that kind of quarterback. And again, now you're going to get into the personality stuff because you hear a lot about Josh Rosen. I've actually been around him. He's an incredibly smart guy. Whether people find him arrogant or too smart, I can't answer that. But he's a really smart, thoughtful guy. And I like watching him because of the way in which he plays the position.
I'm interested and curious to hear what you mean when you say the changing nature of offense, both in college football and in the pro football.
Well, I think Steve would probably agree with this. I think that 10 or 15 years ago, my guess is both Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson would be sixth or seventh round afterthoughts.
Well, that's a good point.
And what's different now?
I think that, you know, that's clearly not the case right now. So I think what you're dealing with right now is you look at what Bill O'Brien did with Deshaun Watson. I know there's been a lot of talk about Lamar Jackson this week with all of our good friend Bill Polian, who could be the smartest guy out there, and for people to rip him is ridiculous, but that's a whole nother point. But just the general talk about Lamar Jackson, I think to myself, okay, if you put Lamar Jackson in that offense that Bill O'Brien ran with Deshaun Watson, why couldn't he have success? You know, of course, 10 or 15 years ago, no one would be running that offense in the NFL. But, you know, I think there's been a changing nature of NFL offense to some degree, and therefore it's changed the nature of the quarterback position. An offense like that really defines the reads for quarterbacks. I don't want to say it makes it easy because that'd be ridiculous to say about the NFL, but it's certainly different than what we saw, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago with quarterbacks. You know, even Lamar Jackson. Bobby Petrino runs a lot of pro-style concepts in the pass game, so he's very familiar with pro-style passing game concepts. So it'll be very interesting. Baker Mayfield, I was really surprised, guys. I actually, besides watching full games, I actually pulled up all his 15-plus completions, and there were maybe 130 of them. Only five or six came outside of structure. So he actually threw the ball within the timing and structure of the offense, and I don't think that's the public perception out there. I think people see him more as a runaround guy, but that's not what the tape showed.
Back to Lamar Jackson and what Polian said, and others actually have said, you know, maybe he should get a look at another position, wide receiver perhaps. How will that affect what he does at the combine next week, if anything? I mean, is he going to be just totally focused on showing that he's a passer and a competent, really maybe good NFL passer?
I think he's a quarterback prospect. To me, he's a quarterback prospect. I don't think that it's the spectacular nature of his running that has people saying what Bill said. And once Bill clarified it, it made perfect sense, obviously, and that's what he meant. But the issue for teams is because he's so gifted. I mean, for all we know, he could run a 4.38 at the combine, which would be ridiculous. He could run better than that. But the problem for him is teams may want to get him on the field. And what that does is then limit his quarterback reps and his chance to develop as a quarterback. But ultimately, to me, he's a quarterback. And I think that, are there things he needs work on? Absolutely. You could say that about any quarterback coming out. But to me, he is a quarterback prospect, and I would love to see him get that opportunity.
Could we see a return of the slash player like we did with Cordell Stewart, where he's a quarterback slash playmaker slash offensive weapon kind of thing? I mean, if a team's in that position, that would certainly make sense.
You certainly could. And as I said, that would hinder his development as a quarterback, but the team is trying to win games. And if they feel that can help them win games, you might. But, you know, it would certainly hinder his development. But, again, that's the way it is.
Greg Cosell on the line with us, talking about some of the quarterbacks that we will see next week at the Combine. And you already touched a little bit on Baker Mayfield. How much do his measurables impact the assessment that he will get next week? You know, he's just a little bit over 6 foot, I guess. Does that make him a troubling pick for some teams? What do you think?
You know, I think that might have been the case. I don't know if it still is the case. I think that the nature of pass offense, too, in the NFL, another sort of ancillary point to the changing nature is how much more quick game there is. Three-step drop, quick five-step drop where the ball comes out. And, you know, I think that minimizes the height issue. So I don't know if that's going to be a deciding factor for teams. Might it be for some? Is he the ideal size? Absolutely not. But I don't think that is now a determining factor in not picking him if you like the way he plays. And he's very accurate. He has a compact delivery. Now, at times, is there a concerning lack of discipline to his game, particularly against blitz? That's what stood out watching the tape. That's something you have to work through. He's another guy like Darnold who at times is a baller more than a pocket technician. But as I said, the biggest takeaway for me was watching his more explosive type plays and how many came within structure. So, you know, I think that he's more than capable of that. And I think you have to coach him that way. And I think he'd be willing to listen. I think that, again, I don't know Baker Mayfield, and I know there's a certain perception to him, but I liked the tape on him.
Yeah, I was going to ask, that's the one thing you don't know. And Murph and I have talked in circles about it. The one thing, you think back about quarterbacks who weren't very tall who made it, and Drew Brees comes to mind as a guy who
– Sure.
And I talked to Murph, and I talked to San Diego Charger executives when they drafted – Philip Rivers, they drafted Philip Rivers so high because they were really positive that Drew Brees couldn't play. And all of a sudden on that draft, when Philip Rivers became a San Diego Charger, the light went on for Drew Brees, and now he's the only guy with multiple 5,000-yard seasons. He's going to head to the Hall of Fame. He's got a world championship with a different team. So when you're talking about coaching these guys like Baker Mayfield and guys who have done it like Drew Brees, is there – a concern, given Baker Mayfield's persona and his personality, that some light needs to go on for him?
It's possible. Again, we don't know him. You know, I don't know if you've gotten a chance to meet him. I haven't. But see, you hit on something that I think is critical when it comes to quarterbacks as they transition, and that's coaching. See, I think Sean Payton is a really, really good offensive coach. I think we would all agree with that. And I think that he understood Drew Brees, and he's helped him become what he is. I think that's absolutely critical. You can go back in history, Steve, you know, it's easy now to say Joe Montana is great, but I personally believe that Bill Walsh had a lot to do with that, with how he used him and the style of pass game that he designed and ran. So I think for someone like Baker Mayfield, coaching becomes absolutely critical. And, of course, then the player's willingness to accept that.
Greg Cosell on the line with us, another quarterback. And I'm curious as to whether you think this guy is a first-rounder. Josh Allen, the big man from Wyoming. What have you seen of him, and do you think he would be, you know, among the four, I guess, quarterbacks chosen in the first round in April?
Yeah, he's going to be very polarizing in draft rooms because what you're dealing with is a kid here. He's very big. He's very athletic. He's got tremendous arm strength. I would say he needs work with touch and pace throwing the football. So I don't want to say he's a great arm talent because that's part of throwing a football. But he's got tremendous arm strength. Now, he remains very unrefined and inconsistent in his execution. He misses too many routine throws that certainly you have to make in the NFL. He's a little loose and undisciplined in his game. But, you know, he's almost like a young wild stallion who needs to be channeled. But someone's going to look at him and say, if we can coach him and if we can get him to be a little more disciplined and if we can, you know, sort of calm him down, get his game a little more structured, that this kid has a chance to be special. Now, I know what's thrown out there, that guys who complete 56 or 57% don't end up being great NFL quarterbacks. And, hey, if that happens, the people who said that will say, told you so. But it's hard to overlook the size, the movement, and the arm strength.
Yeah, that's the one thing. And that's really what the combine's all about too, Greg. When you get these guys in, that their physical attributes are the one – and I was using this analogy, the physical attributes that you can measure are the one thing that gives you a ticket into the arena. But yeah, you don't get to take the stage unless you bring a lot of other things to the product. You're just a spectator.
Great point.
And if you want to be the lead singer in the band at the concert instead of just a ticket holder, you got to bring more to the table than just your ticket. I mean, that's what really these teams are having trouble defining and finding out. That's the great holy grail of this whole process, is that you can't read what's inside these guys.
But keep in mind, Steve, and you know this, it's a lot easier to justify to an owner drafting Josh Allen than Baker Mayfield, because all you have to do is look at Josh Allen and say, guy's almost 6'5", he's 237, look at him move, look at him throw. You know, Baker Mayfield, you have to really sort of stand on the table, bang your fists, and really go into detail as to why we should take a guy that's just over 6 feet.
Yeah, and that's the issue too. But it's also in the NFL, it's very prevalent that you get a coach in the room. He says, I can do that. That's my thing.
Right.
I am the guy who can bring that, the best in him. I'm the guy that can make Josh Allen. I can do that. That's why Tyrod Taylor will probably be some player, because I think they're not using him the right way. I think they're not asking him to do the right things. You go down the list of quarterbacks who have switched teams, there's somebody over there thinking, I can push his right buttons.
And that's true with really any position. I sit here and watch a ton of guys on tape. And you know, you see guys that are talented but have some issues. And I always say to myself, there are coaches who will look at a guy that has talent and say, I can coach him and I can make him into a really good player because the talent is there.
Hey, Allen, Rosen, Darnold, Jackson, Mayfield, are they all first-rounders? Is there anybody else we should be talking about in your mind?
Well, Murph, you know how it goes in the NFL. You know, they could all be first-rounders. I mean, every year we say, oh, that guy's not going to be a top-five pick, and you know what? He's a top-five pick.
Yeah.
It's the quarterback position, so, you know, it could well be the case. I haven't gotten to Luke Falk yet from Washington State. I looked at him last summer from his year before. I didn't see him that way. Mason Rudolph is a guy that some might consider as a first rounder. I did not personally see him that way, which doesn't mean I don't think he could be a quality starting quarterback at some point down the road. But I don't see him as a first round pick, but I know others do.
Well, and I guess what it gets to, for as far as the Buffalo Bills and their fans are thinking about, Greg, is, you know, here the Bills with these premium picks. They have a lot of them in the first three rounds anyway. Is this a year when the talent warrants that the Bills go up and get one of these guys? Or is this a year that maybe you sit back and see where you're at when, you know, 21 or 22?
It's I understand that it's easy for me to say because I'm not the one pulling the trigger,
right,
but here's
the
way I would see it.
Yes.
If you really love a guy and you believe he's truly the guy, then you make the move. You don't make the move, in my opinion, just because he's a quarterback and you think you need one. What do they have? 6 of the first 90? Is that what they have?
5 of the first 95, I think.
95, yeah.
Yeah.
They have two ones.
So they have some ammunition if they want to use it, But as I said, you can't just use it because it's a quarterback. You have to use it because you have a firm, deeply held conviction that the guy you're going to get is the guy. And when I say the guy, he doesn't have to be Tom Brady. Okay, there's only one of those guys. But you have to believe that he's the guy who's now going to be your quarterback going forward.
Greg, I always enjoy talking with you. I love guys who actually go down and grind away in the tape. It's not something I really enjoy doing. It's kind of
the, I love it, Steve. See, I love the process.
Yeah, you're not right.
I just love it.
Yeah, you're like the rest of those guys. There's something wrong with coaches who sit in dark rooms and enjoy it and do nothing but look at the little lighted screen and watch bodies run around.
That's what I do. I know that pretty much now every day. So
you guys are like mushrooms.
Yeah, and there's another line that goes with that, which we can't say right now.
Yeah.
Hey, Greg, thanks for this. We'll see you out there in Indy next week. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to it, Murph. Thank you.
Greg Cosell, he is the executive producer analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN, senior producer NFL Films for almost 40 years. He's gone through the video, you can tell, in the last 3 weeks, Steve.
Yeah, and it's right.
He's right. You need a quarterback. Okay, this kind of goes what I've been saying this week with Donald earlier and with you. Yes, the Bills need a quarterback. But you better have a pretty strong conviction on one of these guys if you're going to give up all these picks. I mean, the five in the first 95, they have a lot of cash.
And if you do jump into the top five, there's an enormous pressure to put the guy on the field right now.
Yeah.
Even if it's not best for him, even if it's not best for the club, even if you got to put him on the field right now because if he's that high a pick, he should be ready to do that. Well, that doesn't always translate to the truth in the NFL. The guy might not be quite ready. You might not want to throw him out there on opening day playing against, the defending champion Philadelphia Eagles or the New England Patriots or the Pittsburgh Steelers. It might not be the best thing for them. Or the Jacksonville Jaguars, who had the number one defense in the league last year. You know, those are the kind of things you have to consider. You don't want them to go out and have an outing like Nathan Peterman did against the L.A. Chargers. You want them to have some success early, and it's hard to orchestrate that.
Talking about quarterbacks, talking about the combine, we'd love to hear from you. The phone line's open. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk about some of these issues. 803-0550 is the number. Outside Buffalo, it's toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. Steve and I coming back live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back with more John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Greg Cosell for joining us. Coming up in the 2 o'clock hour, Jeff Foster, who is president of the National Football Scouting, will join us. He's the guy who administers the NFL Combine next week. Little NFL news today. Chiefs making a major trade. Second time this offseason they've done that. Report is the Rams and the Chiefs are in the final stages of agreeing on a trade that would send cornerback Marcus Peters to the Rams. According to Adam Schefter of ESPN, they just sent Alex Smith to Washington a couple of weeks ago. The deal cannot become official until the start of the league year next month. Marcus Peters, very talented, but he was kind of a handful. You know, he had issues. He was suspended for one game, talked heated up during the offseason that the Chiefs were finished with him. First-round pick in 2015, scheduled to make $1.7 million this year. The Rams will presumably pick up the fifth-year option for next year as well. He's a really good player. He was, he's the guy who... He just created problems for them last year. Didn't he throw a flag into the stands at one point last year, Steve? Marcus Peters, very, very talented player.
Yeah, he's a real athlete, and he is first-round talent, but he's also one of those guys, and we've been talking about the combine and why teams are drawn towards guys and away from guys. Marcus Peters is as good a cornerback as you'll find in the NFL. He takes on blockers. He tackles well. He's a ball hawk. He creates turnover. I mean, he's everything you want. He is a top-flight elite cornerback. And to see him move, that'll give you an idea – from the Chiefs, that'll give you an idea of just how – much of a handful he was. For our viewers on MSG, you can see the shot of him picking up the flag after a holding call in the end zone and throwing it into the stands. And he's just a handful. And
not in a good way.
And not in a good way. But he's a guy who can really, really go.
Can play.
And you talk about that. Murph, we've been talking about this combine. You test guys at the combine for everything. They go through, they have their entire medical history. They'll go see the doctors, and guys who have had injuries, they will go over every single injury that is documented that player has ever had and then ask him if there's any more. They will x-ray him. They will look at the x-rays. They will look at recent x-rays, old x-rays. They'll take new x-rays. They'll look at guys and completely evaluate them medically. They'll give them intelligence tests. The Wunderlich test is one that everybody knows about and all that, and guys take it, and they see if they fail it or if they win it, or if they you get word coming out later the guy got a 2 on his Wunderlich test. And a lot of guys, you know, tear it in half and give it back to him. You know, they won't do it. But then they also get drug tested. And there's an article we read today about guys who used to be a death knell for your draft status. If you're a top pick of the draft talent and you tested positive for marijuana at the combine, you all of a sudden become a second round pick, which is millions of bucks back then.
Yeah.
Now, and there's word coming out, and you've seen it, marijuana's not quite so frowned upon.
No, it's legal effect. In several states.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is, the guys know it's obvious that they want you to test clean for marijuana at the NFL Combine. You know the test is coming up, and teams use it as a baseline intelligence discipline test. How bad do you want to play in the NFL? Well, you want to put your best foot forward at this job interview at the Combine that we're all going to be at for another week? You want to put your best foot forward, and you can't stay clean for a drug test when you know it's coming?
Yeah.
How important can football be? How
right.
important can our football team be to you if you can't stay clean for that long? And how important is that area of your life more important than football? How deep are you going to dig on a 3rd and 2 in the 4th quarter of a playoff game if you're thinking, you know, if it's not that important to you?
And yet teams know that many players, I believe, survive, get through an NFL season by using marijuana.
Yeah, listen, there's no question that it's used by players, no question. That it can be, it probably is a problem for more than a handful of guys. I mean, there's probably an issue with it for some guys. And some guys have issues that are only dealt with by cannabis and the medical marijuana that's available to them if they can use it, but they can't, which is against the rules.
Yeah,
that's an issue that I think the Players Association needs to address. But by the same token, you're really talking about an investment of a player and how much it means to him when he can't, you know, stay clean for a drug test. And it, while it's not like it used to be where they're saying, listen, he's off our board now, we're not even going to draft him, there have been other players like Warren Sapp,
yeah,
failed his combine drug test, and he's in the Hall of Fame. There have been other players who've done it. Now, Bill Polian, Greg Cosell was teasing us about Bill Polian, our buddy, who people were ripping on. You know, he said a couple weeks ago, I wouldn't even talk to anybody about trading Nick Foles unless it was 2 ones and 2 twos and a
right.
player. And Bill has the – here's the thing. Bill knew it was going to be a high price. What he does is he exaggerates everything to make the point he's trying to make. And his point was, listen, Nick Foles is going to come for a pretty penny. Same thing with these guys. Nobody's ever done well in the NFL who's ever tested positive for marijuana. Well, that's not quite true either.
Right.
But by and large, that's a pretty good thumbnail generalization.
Here's a call from Rocky in Angola, New York. Go ahead, Rocky. Welcome.
John, hi, Steve.
Hi.
What's your take on Mason Rudolph?
Now, I don't know about him too much, but I know this. When during the football season, I got a text from a good friend of mine who's an Oklahoma State alum, and he said Baker Mayfield is a must for the Bills to get.
Really?
He loves the guy. Of course, he's an alum of Oklahoma State, and he played running back here in Buffalo. So he's totally biased. But I have heard good things. I mean, this is a guy who at 21-22, and everything falls as it shouldn't. Mason Rudolph might be there at 21-22.
Oh, yeah, he should be. He might be in their second round.
He may be, but he's a senior. He's got an extra year of football under his belt that a lot of those guys do not have. He played in a pretty good conference, although Oklahoma State is in the Big 12 conference, which is not known to have great defenses. Nevertheless, you know, when you do your measurables and watch him play, the guy has some things. And he throws the football out. He makes quick decisions. His accuracy, his athleticism, he's a pro-caliber quarterback with no experience. We'll see, you know, what kind of experience he brings and what he can bring to it. Physically, he looks like an NFL quarterback. But, you know, as we all know, you know, physically a lot of guys who can't play at all are NFL quarterbacks.
Thanks for your call. We'll take a call here from Gary in Rochester. Gary, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you.
Good.
Listen, I think you could probably take some cold medicine, though, huh?
Yeah, I have been taking it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm curious to take a look at what quarterbacks are available that are in the area of the Virginia quarterback. You know, we constantly get information on the, let's say, the top five or six, but what might we see that might be interesting for us as a team in the second round and third round? And really, that's what I'd like to take a peek at.
Second or third round.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's a good question. And there's no way I can tell you, because really, I'm like everybody else. I'm thinking about the Buffalo Bills trading into the top five or the top ten and getting one of the guys that we're talking about.
Yeah.
There are other guys who are further down the draft list, like the kid Falk, Luke Falk, that Greg Cosell talked about. There's no doubt I think that he and probably Lamar Jackson will probably be available when the Bills pick in the first round, certainly in the first round, maybe even the second round. What do you do with those picks? Are they good enough to warrant investing that pick in them when you could probably get a good edge rusher or two edge rushers in those spots, or two defensive tackles in those spots that could help your team a little bit more than a quarterback who may or may not even be ready to play in the NFL on opening day after a training camp. So I can't tell you. I'm not there yet.
Here's a call from Jonathan in Alden. Go ahead, Jonathan. You're on the air with us.
Hey, John. Hey, Steve. Great show as always.
Thank you, Jonathan.
I would say the thing that they need to look for, the Bills need to look forward to, is a quarterback who's going to release the ball fast. I mean, look at the Bills in the early 90s. Jim Kelly got the ball off so fast with the no-huddle offense, the defense didn't have time to adjust. Or how Tom Brady dominated the last 20 years of football, just all fast. So I think they should go after like Josh Rosen, just find a quarterback who can release the ball fast before defense has time to adjust and prepare.
Yeah, and I get it. But releasing the ball fast, having a quick release is one thing. Knowing where to throw it's a totally another thing. And I get it. And sometimes that's a function of the coaching you've gotten and the preparation, the kind of offense that you run. And sometimes it's a function of being a good quarterback. But when if you watch the film, you got to ask, is the guy supposed to throw it real fast? Is he supposed to release it after a three-step drop or a five-step drop? Or is more what you're talking about the release? When he's standing back there waiting for a receiver to come open and a guy's bearing down on him, and this is an NFL quarterback, and you see it all the time. An NFL quarterback will stand in the pocket, and the rush will be coming right down his grill. And he has to stand there and wait for the receiver to get to the point of his route where he can throw it on the timing, and then stand there, deliver the football, and take a hit right in the chest from a guy like Kyle Williams. If that's what you're talking about, the guy's standing there, and the closer the defensive lineman gets, he's still got the ball. And Dan Marino was great at this. All the old Buffalo Bill and Miami Dolphin fans and NFL fans remember Dan. He had the quickest release ever. Bruce Smith would be literally a half a step off him, and the ball would be holding both hands, the ball in his chest. He could get that ball away with Bruce that close to him closing fast, even when he wasn't even starting his windup. That's how quick his release was. If that's what you're talking about, yeah, no question. That's something an NFL quarterback needs. But more importantly than that, he's got to know where he's throwing it to, and when he pulls the trigger, it's got to be inside a 1 or 2 foot circle, sometimes smaller than that, sometimes larger than that, but sometimes smaller than that. It has to be accurate. He has to throw it in the right spot, and it has to be accurate, and he has to be able to hold on to it until the play develops. And, you know, so all those things are true. And you say throwing the ball fast, getting rid of it fast is one thing. Hey, you can do that with scheme. But a quick release you got to work on, and accuracy is the most underrated aspect of a good quarterback.
What goes on at the combine, part of it is one-on-one interviews. We're going to talk about some of the questions that are asked at the combine when we come back. John Murphy, Steve Dasker, coming back for more. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
We're at the combine next week. Myself and Donald Jones will be there. Steve Tasker's in studio with us now. We talked a minute ago about the interviews at the combine. I think Greg Cosell talked about it. See, I happen to think they're only 15 minutes. So you might get a kind of a – you're interviewing somebody that you're thinking about drafting, and you hear something, you think, we got to talk more to this guy, right? I mean, after 15
Absolutely,
minutes.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, too, that
– what are you going to learn?
That's one of the things that the big stories coming out, sometimes you hear weird questions they ask them. And I think one of the reasons they ask those questions that are off the wall is to get these guys off their script.
Yeah.
To get them from – you know, you can tell the kid comes in, and he's sitting there, he's stiff as a board, and he's nervous, he doesn't want to – and he's been coached, and everything you ask him, he gives you a cliche answer.
Yeah.
You know, or Johnny rah-rah answer. You got to ask him something that there's no script for.
Well, we got a couple of questions that came up, people who have reported these questions, being asked these questions in recent combines. Tight end Hayden Pline from UTEP last year at the combine. Here's one of the questions he said he faced. Would you rather be a cat or a dog? Who's going to say cat, by the way, right? They're all going to say a dog. I'd rather be a dog.
Yeah, or maybe a cat because they're better athletes, you know? I mean, they're more explosive
they're
animals.
Say a dog. I'm a dog.
Are you? Well, see, what do you do? Why? That's the thing. Well, who cares?
It doesn't, the answer doesn't matter. It's how you explain it?
Well, I don't know. What are they looking for?
I think they're looking for guys who say, I'm a dog. Not a cat.
What if they're looking for the other thing?
They don't want a cat. Who wants a cat? You want a dog.
You want an explosive cat animal.
No, you want a dog.
You want a cat that can jump 6-7 feet in the air from being 6 inches tall. You want the explosive athlete.
Offensive lineman from Kentucky, John Toth. What color is snow? What color is melted snow?
Snow is white. Melted snow is clear.
Really? Melted snow is clear? What do you mean?
It's water.
All right. What's the right answer there, by the way?
Yeah.
I mean, what are you looking
for?
I
just told you what the right answer was.
What are you looking for?
You're looking
What are you looking for? You want to know people?
I have no idea. See, I don't know. I don't get it. You got to get them think about something, and I don't get where they're going with it. And listen, these interviews are.
These are some of the questions.
I get it. I get it.
Jeremy Sprinkle, tight end from Arkansas. If a bus crashed, where would you want to be sitting?
Furthest away from impact.
Yeah, right. I don't want to be on the bus. I want to be sitting on the side of the road watching the bus.
I want to be as far away from impact as I can be.
You wonder what they're looking for.
And then they're saying, oh, you're a coward. I'm like, well, it's a bus crash. It's not a football game.
Right, right.
Why
who
do I
wants
want
to be in a bus crash? I want to be right up front.
I'm not talking to taking a bullet. You're talking about taking a bus crash. I mean,
who wants to be anywhere near a bus crash?
I want as far away from impact as I can be.
Defensive end from Arkansas, Chris Smith. He was asked this question. How many ways can you use a brick in a minute? Well, I mean, what would you do? You could say hundreds or you could say one. I'll put the brick down here. Again, what are they looking for? Somebody who's creative? Somebody who's – don't look at me. I didn't ask the question.
That's
– how many ways can you use a brick in a minute? I don't
me?
Know what the right answer is.
Me per- is that,
yeah,
okay,
if
me
I
asked personally
you that
or
question.
Anybody. What do? You a coaster? What are you going to use it for?
I don't know.
A doorstop? Or just say, list all the ways you can use
a brick
in a minute.
Minute.
Oh, my gosh.
Austin Lane, defensive end for Murray State. This is now we're getting weird. He was asked at the combine, do you think your mother is attractive? That's just a little weird.
You got to answer yes.
Right.
Don't you?
You do. You can't say no. I mean, immediately the NFL people say, what's wrong with him? He doesn't think his mother is attractive.
Whether you do or not. Whether mom's 97 years old or, you know. Something else.
Yeah.
You got to say yes.
You got to say yes. And one more. This is a question asked offensive lineman Spencer Drango from Baylor. Would you share your internet history with us? Well, you're going to say yes. Now, whether or not you actually would is another question. But, right, in a combine, in a job-type interview, would you share your interview history with us? You're going to say, oh, sure, no problem. And you immediately be thinking to yourself, what do I have to bury in there so they don't see? Right? You'd immediately be thinking, what's in there that I don't want them to see?
Yeah.
These
share
are actual questions that came up at the combine. So, again, you got these 15-minute nighttime interviews. I don't know that anything
just,
really.
You got to answer. You got to be as open and you say yes to everything. Say, yeah, I'm in. You got to be. That's typical job interview stuff. That's the attitude you have to go in there with. But it's a strange interview. Certainly, the HR department and whatever moral boundaries apply to a business setting. You can't use – they don't apply in the NFL, I guess,
right?
Can you imagine going in as an executive in an interview process and they ask you if you thought your mom was pretty?
You turn around and walk out.
What?
I don't need this job. No, thank you. I don't need this job. Let's take a call here from Mike in Orchard Park. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air with us.
Hi, John.
Hi.
John, I wanted to ask this question a couple of months ago, but – I ran out of time during one of your shows. It was the week after that Nathan Peterman I believe, in San Diego, was it?
LA, yeah.
LA, right. And I just thought that the plan that they put in place for Nathan was very not well thought out. I mean, he came out throwing left and right, and I would have thought that a quarterback with his experience in his first big game would have started out very slow, let him gain some momentum and some confidence, and then let him let's see how he plays. But what's your thought on that? And do you think that the Bills have given up on Nathan? I'm going to hang up and listen to your answer.
Okay.
Thanks so much. Great show.
Thank you. I do not think they've given up on Nathan Peterman. I do not at all. I think they are eager to get him in here in the middle of April and see what he has and maybe how he's progressed from a year ago, get him involved in this new offense that he'll be learning. I do not think they've given up on him. The game at Los Angeles, you know, I don't know if they came out intending to throw as much as they did. They fell behind because of the early interceptions, and then they had to in the first half. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing really went well that day.
No, I think there's no...
You know, a couple of picks off teammates' hands and some unblocked pass rushers. Nothing went
You can well. Say that what you want about the game plan against the L.A. Chargers that Nathan Peterman was given. Certainly they didn't set him out to give him a difficult time. I mean, they had him roll... The first interception was a rollout easy throw. He made a good throw, and it got banged up into the air and turned into an interception. I mean, that... So it got worse from there. And then when they had, I think it was the third interception, where he dropped back to throw and threw a quick hitch on the outside. Well, they had already gotten on a 4-point lead. They knew that the Bills were going to get the ball out of his hands quick. They didn't want him to have to stand back there with Joey Bosa and their pass rush that were really making some hay. And they knew the ball was coming out quick. They sat on the route and jumped it. That was a result of the first two. It wasn't a result of him making a bad throw, a bad choice. It was a point where things started to go south. And then the interception that he threw going backwards that we're looking at right now, that was a bad interception, no question about it. And things got out of hand pretty quickly. But, you know, you can say what you want about the game plan and how ineffective it was with Nathan Peterman, but by the simple fact of the matter was, it wasn't successful.
Yeah.
And he wasn't ready to overcome it. And I don't. That doesn't mean that his career is finished. It doesn't even mean his career is over here in Buffalo. It just means that he had a really, really bad outing on his first time starting the NFL.
Yeah, I don't think they've given up on him at all. Thanks for your call. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Combine. We're going to be there next week. We're going to talk with Jeff Foster when we return. He is the president of National Football Scouting, the organization that actually runs the NFL Combine. He'll be joining us when we come back, plus more of your phone calls in the third and final hour of the show. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive. A little bit of Bills news that came out late yesterday. Ian Rappaport from NFL.com said that the Bills are not planning on cutting Tyrod Taylor without knowing who his replacement will be. He said the Bills are okay with paying him that $6 million roster bonus that he is due just to keep him on the roster. Taylor due the $6 million bonus on the third day of the new league year, and Ian Rappaport says they're going to be ready to pay that as they assess their options at quarterback. A trade coming up in the NFL. It won't be yet, but once the league year opens in 3 weeks, it could be. The Kansas City Chiefs making another major trade, this time with the Los Angeles Rams. They're in the final stages of agreeing to a deal that would send cornerback Marcus Peters to the Los Angeles Rams. Peters, the Chiefs' first-round pick in 2015, scheduled to make $1.7 million this year. The Rams presumably will pick up his fifth-year option for the following year as well. Tampa Bay Buccaneers have released veteran kicker Nick Folk. He played just four games in his one season with Tampa Bay last year. Sabres hockey, they play the Washington Capitals tomorrow night in D.C., face-off 7 o'clock. Then Buffalo returns home Sunday for a 5 p.m. game against the Boston Bruins. Last night, Marco Scandella scored the game winner with 0.2 seconds left on the clock in a 3-2 Buffalo overtime victory in Detroit. Evander Kane also picked up his 20th goal of the season in that Buffalo win. Germany upset Canada, and Germany moves on to play for the gold medal in the Olympic hockey tournament, men's hockey tournament. Germany beat Canada by a score of 4-3 today. Canada will play for the bronze medal now coming up on Sunday, while Germany will play the Soviet or the Russian Olympians on Sunday for the gold. Purple Eagles of Niagara home against Marist College tonight, 7 o'clock tip-off at the Gallagher Center. Niagara with 11 league wins, third place in the league. They've won 11 of their last 15, looking to sweep the series from Marist for the second time in the last three seasons. Players from more than 20 NCAA basketball programs have been identified as possibly breaking NCAA rules, violations uncovered by the FBI into an investigation into corruption in college basketball. That is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here in our One Buffalo studio. We are off to the Combine in Indianapolis starting next week. We'll be there next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to look at some of those great athletes assembled down there in Indy. Joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a man who puts it all together. He is president of National Football Scouting Incorporated. Happy to have Jeff Foster on the line with us. Jeff, John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, John.
Everything ready to go? I mean, you're just days away from starting to welcome those players. What has to happen over these next few days, Jeff?
Well, I'm not sure we're ever ready, but I am anxious to get started. You know, we still have quite a few of the logistics that we're working on right now, but we're in good shape and looking forward to a great year.
What's the most difficult part of this, Jeff? I mean, obviously you got to coordinate hundreds of people and getting the field all set up and ready to go. But, you know, what is the most difficult problem that you guys face?
Well, I think logistically the biggest challenge for us is the scheduling of the medical testing. You know, obviously the medicals are the most important element to the clubs and therefore the most important to us. And just the such a large battery of tests, we actually have the largest number of players attending that we've ever had. So we never can anticipate exactly how many tests will be scheduled, you know, as the physicians and the athletic trainers will decide that once they're into their examinations. But that scheduling over that four-day period is really challenging. We've got a great partner here in IU Health, and you know, so we anticipate it going smoothly, but you just never know. You know, the second piece of it that's challenging is, you know, as the event has grown from a public standpoint and really grown into a marketing asset for the league. For us, it's protecting the integrity of that football and medical event and still working together with the NFL to create all those pieces on the outside for fan interaction and those types of things.
Talk a little bit about the medical x-ray. As you say, that it's really the most important thing for the clubs because they don't want to draft a guy and then find out that he can't play because of a medical issue. What are they allowed to do at the combine physically? Can they give these guys x-rays, MRIs, CAT scans, EKGs? Is it that in-depth of a medical exam?
It is. It's a really extensive medical exam. And you know, it starts with kind of a standard battery of tests that we do on all players, and sometimes different for different positions. But then more importantly, each of the NFL team physicians and athletic trainers have an opportunity to examine each player. And during those examinations, they can then request additional, what we call special studies, so MRIs, CTs, X-rays, things of that nature. So we work together with the college athletic trainers to learn more about the background and health of the players before they arrive so that we can do some pre-ordering. You know, so for instance, if we know a player has had significant knee injuries or surgeries in the past, we will go ahead and pre-order some MRIs and special imaging for that player just to be prepared so that it improves the quality of the examination when the athlete is in the room with the team physicians. But yes, I mean, we do an extensive number of special studies and special labs in addition to our normal battery.
With Jeff Foster, president of National Football Scouting, they run the Combine next week in Indianapolis. How many players invited to the Combine, Jeff?
We have 336 players invited.
And how do you get to that number? How do you decide who's invited and who's left out?
Well, that's one of the biggest challenges. You know, evaluating players is a subjective business. And, you know, for us, there's always really good, talented players that are left out of the Combine. I think that would be true if we invited 400. But what we do is we involve all 32 teams in the initial process, which is something we just started a couple of years ago. And we ask each of the 32 teams to participate in an initial round of review and selection of players. You know, the event is truly for the team, so it's most important for them to weigh in as to what players they think should attend. One of the bigger challenges in the selection process is the underclassmen. We never know how many of those players will actually declare. And we don't do any evaluation or any consideration of those underclassmen until they've officially declared and we receive that official list from the NFL. And then at that point, we're trying to scramble to kind of catch up. So we have a small contingency of teams, somewhere between 12 and 15 teams that participate on the selection committee, and we'll review those underclassmen. And then if there's space available when we're done with the underclassmen, then we'll go back to a select group of seniors who we kind of put on a wait list during that initial review. But, you know, every year, you know, there's somewhere between 20 and 40 players that don't get invited who end up getting drafted. So, you know, that speaks to, you know, part of the process and, you know, also the opportunity for the athletes who don't attend the combine to do well in their pro days and their 30 visits and all of the other events leading up to and including, you know, leading up to the draft.
Yeah, I was wondering about if a team had a prospect in mind that they knew about and maybe weren't sure that everybody knew about them, maybe they wouldn't want them at the combine, huh? Why not keep it to yourself?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that certainly comes into play. I think that was probably more appropriate 10 years ago. I think the idea of hiding players in today's marketplace and with the technology that's involved and the ability to watch film from anywhere and at any level, I think that's certainly more challenging. But, you know, we're very selective with who is on the committee from both a club and a personnel standpoint. You know, we want to make sure that we get this right. It's important to the players and it's important to the club. So we want to make sure that there's not any you know, attempt to hide players or anything like that. And we will go back and review the committee selections. And if, you know, if a committee member has drafted a player that they didn't vote for, then that raises flags for us. And, you know, we probably exclude them from the committee in the future years.
Yeah, Jeff Foster on the phone with us, president of National Football Scouting. He's running the NFL Combine for his 13th year. And you think back over the, you know, 13 years that you've been doing this, what's one of the strangest things that you've ever encountered in this whole big event that has become, yeah, now it's a media and fans and, you know, it's like everything in the NFL, it outgrows itself pretty quickly. But what's some of the stranger things that you've dealt with over the past decade and a half almost?
Well, I don't know how long the show is. you know, there's probably quite a list. But every year there's something unique that happens, and generally it involves a player. You know, we've had players, not for many years, but in my first couple of years, it was harder to track the players. I think the players themselves in today's marketplace and with today's agents, I think they do a better job of preparing. They understand how important the job interview is. So we haven't seen players leaving early or doing anything that they shouldn't do necessarily. But, yeah, there's always some good stories that come out from behind. You know, I think the wardrobe malfunction we had a couple years ago, I think that surprised a lot of people in the building as well as on the on the viewing. But, yeah, the event has certainly changed over the past few years, and it's changing again this year. You know, I think we'll have the largest number of fans in the stadium that we've ever had, you know, on Saturday, which is, you know, the biggest day from a viewer standpoint with the quarterbacks and wideouts working out. We'll have almost 6,000 fans in the stadium. And then we've also, the NFL has also launched the Combine experience again this year. So, you know, there'll be some great fan interaction.
Yeah, Jeff, you talked about that, and I know you said your number one job is to get players ready for these teams to look at, but there are marketing sides to this too, right? I mean, this is basically the NFL's off-season convention. The whole league shows up in Indianapolis for next week, 4 or 5 days at least.
No question, and that's probably been the greatest challenge of the last few years, is trying to make sure that all of those different departments have involvement, but yet don't distract from the real purpose of the players and the club personnel people that are here. And I think so far we've been able to work together to achieve that. And looking forward to expanding on it a little bit this year. At the same time, you know, we're making some improvements for the clubs as well. You know, this year we're going to, at the request of the clubs, we're going to split a couple of the position groups, the defensive line and the defensive backs, who have all traditionally just been put together in two different groups per position. We're going to split those a little differently this year. So we're going to have a group of interior defensive linemen and then a group of edge defensive linemen. And then the DBs, we're trying to split those up into corners and safeties. So just provide a little bit different look on the field, a little bit better evaluation opportunity for the club people. Trying to make changes in that. We've also added some new performance testing. So excited to see how that works out. But yes, I think trying to accommodate the different goals and objectives of the clubs versus the league in terms of fan interaction is challenging, but it also keeps it exciting.
You know, us in the media, it's true. And I was going to ask you about, how the media has changed it when you they're sitting up there in all the concourses. You've got all this, Radio Row's there and all the networks are there. But I think one of the things you said kind of intrigued me. You said about some new performance testing. What are you talking about? I mean, they're going to have new drills for guys to do. Are they going to do different physical tests than they've done in the past? I know it kind of continues to evolve. What's that entail?
Yeah, so, the last few years we've added different components, and most of the time it's at the request of the clubs. One of my first years here, we added the BOD pod, which is the body composition test using air displacement, and that group's still with us today. And then a few years ago, we added functional movement screen as one of the components for the performance testing. And this year we're going to add some a group who helps us manage helps us identify prospects using force plate technology. So a group called Sparta Science, they're going to be here helping us perform a balance and jump test, which we think will provide some new information for the clubs. And again, it's something that a few of the clubs have been using in the past and something that was recommended to us a year ago during our review process.
Hey Jeff, what's a typical day like for a player at the Combine, and how many days are they there? It's just a couple, right? 3 days maybe?
Yeah, so the players are really here 3 full days. As we added more tests, we had to expand things a little bit. So we have a group of athletes that we call early arrivals. So it's all of the underclassmen as well as any player flying from west of Denver. So we actually bring those players in a night early. And what that allows us to do is to put them into the medical system the next morning as opposed to trying to get them into the system during the day or evening because they were the last players arriving. So players are really here 3 full days, and a day and a half of that is the medical testing. And then the second day really is the psychological testing. And then the final day is the on-field testing. And then obviously during the evening is the interviews, which the interviews go, each night that they're here. And it's probably the second most important element next to the medical testing for the clubs.
Tell me about the interviews. And aren't they 15 minutes apiece, right?
There are. So clubs have an opportunity to interview the players in 2 different formats. So each club can request a private 15-minute interview with a total of 60 players. Those are conducted in a private room that the club rents inside the headquarter hotel and can use that room and decorate that room to fit their club. Each evening, the players who are not in those private interviews are over in the Grand Hall and train station over at the Crown Plaza Center. And those interviews are much less formal. They're in kind of a larger setting. Every club has a table, and they can go select a player from a pool and bring the player over and interview the player at their club table. Those are also 15 minutes, again, a little less formal over there. And so typically over there you'll see position coaches and scouts in that area, whereas in the private rooms it's more ownership, general managers, head coaches, coordinators, things like that.
How prevalent are the players' representation hanging around? I mean, there must be a ton of sports agents. There must be a ton of hangers-on. There, maybe some players even bring family members. I mean, who are the players allowed to bring with them, or do they bring anybody with them to this combine?
Well, really, who comes to Indianapolis is up to each individual player and agent. There is an agent meeting here in town during a few days, so a lot of the agents are here. As you mentioned earlier, everyone from the NFL is here, so that obviously attracts the agents as well. Outside of our secure venues, I'm not really sure what happens. We stay focused on what happens behind the scenes. In terms of the secure building, so the stadium, the headquarter hotel, the Crown Plaza, certain sections of the Indiana Convention Center that we now use, and then the train station, all of those are secure venues. Only club personnel, participants, and our staff are allowed in those. So there are no agents or families or any entourage you know, we try to keep that to a minimum. You know, we always remind the players that, you know, if one of us was going for a job interview, we wouldn't bring any of those people with me. And so, you know, from that standpoint, they probably shouldn't either. That being said, we know some of the training facilities and some of the agents, you know, set up in hotels or rooms throughout the city. And sometimes the players will, you know, have interaction with those groups. But in terms of inside the secure venues, there's no one allowed other than the players.
Hey Jeff, how much bigger can the Combine get in terms of, you know, the footprint it leaves on the NFL, both in Indianapolis and around the country, NFL fans around the country?
I think that's a good question, and it's certainly something that we're testing. You know, last year the NFL launched a very large Combine experience over in the Convention Center, and a lot of that was a test to see what type of participation they would receive. We knew that we didn't have most of that space available to us this year, so that Combine experience is a smaller footprint, not necessarily because of the experience last year, but just simply because of the space available. There's a large convention in Indianapolis happening on the back end of our event, and they have most of the convention center. So they're changing it a little bit. I think from what I've seen, it appears that, you know, last year was much more geared towards having kids and families involved, whereas this year, because of the smaller footprint, some of the activities available, including a chalk talk by coaches and general managers in the evenings, is geared more towards maybe adult fans. Huh. And then we also have a new program that we have worked with the NFL to launch in terms of social media. The NFL has invited social media correspondents from 15 different colleges. And so those colleges with multiple players here, they'll have social media correspondents tracking them and using social media to share with their college fans what those athletes are doing. So we're hoping that draws more attention from the fans that are mostly on the college side, but helping them track some of their favorite college players as they transition into the NFL.
Well, we're still talking with Jeff Foster on the phone. He's president of National Football Scouting, and he's putting on the NFL Combine this next week. And Jeff, I just want, like, the last thing I want to ask you really is, what about the future? I mean, Murph just asked you how big it could possibly get. Do you see the growth more in media and fan attention rather than football? I mean, do you ever see the Combine going up to maybe having like 500 guys at the Combine, or stretching it out over a two-week period or something like that, or, you know, splitting it into offense and defense and going 336 guys, you know, on both sides of the football? I mean, is that the kind of growth that we can expect as well, or are they just going to keep it down to maybe, you know, they only draft maybe 350 guys a year, so they bring 330 or 340 guys to the Combine?
Right. Yeah, I think I see most of the growth being on the non-football side. So on the fan interaction and the media side. You know, I think the clubs are comfortable. We did a pretty extensive review over the last 2 years in terms of our processes on the player selection, what types of testing we do, both on the medical and the psychological and the physical. And, you know, as you mentioned, the draft is somewhere in the number of 255. So we feel like inviting 330 players gets us close to that number. So I don't think we'll see any growth there. Additionally, the NFL has experimented in the past with regional combines and a super regional combine. And this year they will be holding another one in late March. And we're helping them with that, identify kind of the next group of players that we thought from a selection process could have been invited here, but should now participate in this additional combine. I think they're experimenting more with that piece on the football side than in expanding what we do. You know, from a footprint standpoint, I think Indianapolis has proven themselves to be very worthy of this event as well as others. You know, I think the Super Bowl that was held here was very well received. So I know Indianapolis can handle and achieve our expectations if the event grows. You know, hopefully our home remains here with future combines.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Jeff. Thanks for coming on with us today. We'll see you down there next week.
Sounds great. I look forward to it, guys. Thank you.
Thank you. Jeff Foster is president of National Football Scouting. He runs the Combine in Indianapolis. We'll be there next week. 336 players invited to the NFL Combine. The testing, Steve, you talked about. Medical, psychological, physical. you know, that's what it is. I mean, that's what they're doing. I think the medical, he actually lists them in that order. The medical tests are number one, I think, for NFL teams.
Yeah.
And as he said, it's basically at least one full day for every one of those 336 players of medical testing.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about what they do, and just as an aside, a couple of weeks ago, my son Luke went to the Jets
right.
to get a and that's what they did. Medical he said for 5 hours.
Yeah.
They looked at every single injury they had ever seen on his medical record and x-ray. He said he got 8 or 9 x-rays.
Good.
And it's just something that they do. And this medical, and you can imagine this, you know, listeners, you got to think, these teams are going to pay these guys 7 figures. And some of them are going to be franchise changing players that are going to mean the difference between successful franchise for a handful of years at least and a franchise that is struggling for a handful of years at least and taking a big hit in the PR and looking like fools and costing general managers and head coaches their jobs. And these are kind of, that's the kind of stakes that we're talking about. So if they draft a kid and he comes to training camp and all of a sudden has a degenerative condition in his knee or his ankle or his shoulder that precludes him from playing and you've wasted that pick on him, your job's at stake.
Sure.
And that's a basic fundamental check,
yeah.
check on the list that you got to get done. So they spend a lot of time doing exactly that, making sure they're healthy enough to play a game that's I don't want to say healthy enough to play a game that's going to tear them up pretty good.
Yeah. Combine next week. We'll be there Wednesday through Friday. A couple of NFL notes. This came in moments ago from Jacksonville. Jaguars owner Shad Khan has extended 2-year contract extensions to Tom Coughlin, his executive vice president of football operations, general manager Dave Caldwell, and head coach Doug Marrone. Statement from Shad Khan, the decision to extend the contracts of Tom, Dave, and Doug is not so much a reward for last season, which no doubt was impressive, as it is to recognize their importance to our football team this coming season and for years to follow. Shad Khan went on to say, we're past celebrating the accomplishments of our division title in the playoff run. Now it's time to take the next step. We need the right leadership firmly in place to make that happen. It's good to know we'll have that with Tom, Dave, and Doug securing their roles with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So 2-year contract extensions for Doug Marrone, GM Dave Caldwell, the Western New Yorker, and Tom Coughlin, the upstate New York native for the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's what will get you when you get deep into the playoffs.
Yeah, and there's no question that I think from what I covered the Jaguars a couple of times this year and of course, talked to Doug Marrone. I've covered Tom Coughlin before, and I've heard, you know, he doesn't do much media now that he's the president of football operations, but Dave Caldwell I've spoken with as well. All those guys seem like they've got a good relationship and a good sense of exactly what each of them is supposed to do. And they all listen to each other about what they need, what they want, what their vision is, what their philosophy is, what their values and where they lie. And they all have a really good understanding and see things the same way. So when you've got a good symmetry like that, it's a good thing to wrap it up and nail it down for the foreseeable future so you can have some stability in an organization and move forward.
This smart move
by Shad Khan.
Yeah, this also came out this afternoon. Marcus Peters, Chiefs young corner, going to be traded to the Los Angeles Rams once the new league year starts on March 14th. No word what's going back the other way, but that's a good pickup for the Rams to get Marcus Peters, one of the good young corners, maybe the best young corner in the league.
He's very good. But like we said before, he's there's a reason the Chiefs are letting him go. He caused some headaches.
Yep. We're going to take a break. We've got more to come, including NFL True or False and a lot more. Your phone calls also when we come back. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasker coming to you live from One Bills Drive. You're going to feel bad that you're not at the combine next week, I bet. I'm just guessing. No?
I do not, actually. I got to be honest. I do not.
Why? 3 shows?
Hey, you know, the weather's getting a little nicer. We're not so homebound. It was raining here a minute ago. We could hear it hitting the roof of the stadium.
I'm looking forward to going to the combine.
You know,
change.
Indianapolis is a nice town.
It's a great place.
It's everything, and he's Jeff Foster, the president of National Football Scouting, who's running the combine, said that Indianapolis is a good venue for it. And it is everything. We can walk everywhere down there. They've got a nice little compact downtown. Not only just for the football aspect or the event aspect, but also in theaters, shopping, restaurants, of course. it's a nice little town for an event like that, and they set it up very well for it. It's going to be fun, I'm sure.
We're going to have fun. Donald and I will be there with the rest of our crew. Talking about the Combine, that is our Twitter poll today. What part of the Combine should be valued the most by NFL teams? You got about 30 minutes left if you want to vote in our Twitter poll. Which part of the Combine should be valued the most? More than half of you, 56%, say the one-on-one interviews. 24% say on-field testing. 16% say medical tests. 4% say something else. I'd vote for medical tests. I think, at least that's the way I think it is handled, Steve. I think the medical tests are number one on the
team. I think that that's the most important thing to do. But if the guy didn't pass the medical test, you know, these guys are coming in because they're great college football players. There's really not a reason to think they're, and I think most of us, like you and me, I mean, I don't really, if they got a medical problem, they're off the board anyway.
Right.
You know, so I kind of, that's a given, but it is probably the most important thing there. Now, it doesn't tell you the most about what the guys you're actually going to draft, except that they're draftable, you know, but yeah, I think when your job's on the line, you got to figure it out. The medical testing is something you got to do. And that's why I think most
critical.
People, I think that's why the teams count it so much.
The other thing we've been talking about a lot today was the report, and it's not real news, but the report that came out yesterday from Ian Rappaport, NFL.com, about Tyrod Taylor basically saying the Bills plan on keeping Tyrod Taylor around for a little while here.
Yeah.
paid him his $6 million bonus that is due on March 16th. And seeing what they get. I don't think it rules out a trade. In fact, I think that's what I believe that's what they're trying to do, kind of flush out some.
Maybe, but you don't want to do it until you have a guy in place that to replace him either. And, you know, I got a tweet, and, you know, if the Bills are too scared to take a leap of faith on a quarterback in the draft, he thinks they're in the wrong business.
Well, who said they're scared to take a leap of faith? Well, I think they are going to draft.
That's why the Bills have they haven't had a legit quarterback since Jim Kelly because they won't take a leap of faith. Well, that's not true because they drafted J.P. Lossman in the first round, and they drafted E.J. Manuel. And, you know, so you're taking a leap of faith on those guys. Now, faith is unfounded. So you can't really say the Bills weren't willing to go out on a limb and try and grab a quarterback. The problem is the guys they've grabbed haven't been very good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the problem. That's why nobody wants to jump out on a guy that they're not sure about.
Right.
They've got to see something in these guys that makes them jump out and say, hey, this is going to be a guy that we want to coach, we want in our organization, we want to live with for a decade, and we think he's got what it takes. That's pretty hard to say about a 22-year-old kid.
Working a phone call or two here. Got a call on the line with a comment about Tyrod. I'm sorry, I don't have your name. Are you there? Please. Caller.
From Hamburg.
Yes, go ahead.
This is my kind of sky theory, but why not talk, if it's possible, talk Tyrod into being the backup for the Bills. We still go ahead and draft a quarterback with our first pick, whether we move up or not. We prepare that guy and Peterman to be our starter, with Tyrod being the experienced backup. And perhaps the new offensive coordinator could do some new wrinkles with Tyrod. But if we can get Tyrod to be content with being the backup and the security blanket, I think it would be a great scenario.
Well, that's the thing. And if Tyrod's under contract and he gives you the best chance to win, you're going to put Tyrod Taylor on the field. If you think the other kid will have whoever you draft, Nathan Peterman or whoever this person is, if you think he gives you the better chance to win, then he's the one you're going to play. But here's the problem with your scenario. If you've got your better quarterback sitting on the bench as a backup, even though you're trying to develop this young kid, the rest of your team in the locker room is going to be looking sideways at your coaching staff and probably take their foot off the gas. They're not going to be out there throwing themselves under the wheels of the chariot every Sunday because you're not trying to win. It's that simple. If you're not giving us the best chance to win by playing Tyrod Taylor, who's better than this rookie, you're not trying to win. I'm not going to risk my career physically for you every Sunday if you're not trying to win. If you've got a better quarterback on your team, or you've got a better wide receiver, or you've got a better defensive tackle, or you've got a better corner, you name the position. If the best guy isn't on the field for your team, you're sending a message that translates into a team that doesn't play hard because you're not given a chance. You're not trying. They're trying. If you want them to try, you got to try. So if you're not playing the best player at every position, your team won't play hard. Hmm. That's why you don't sit Tyrod down, or if he gives you the best chance to win, you got to put him in. That's all there is to it.
Here's a call from Dylan in Rochester. Go ahead, Dylan.
Hey, John.
Hi.
I was wondering, with recent news of Tyrod not being released,
would you expect him to be the quarterback starting next year, or do you think we're going to pick somebody up in the draft or free agency? Who do you expect? Who would you like to be our next quarterback?
Who do I expect? I don't expect it to be Tyrod. I do not expect it to be Tyrod Taylor next year. I expect it to be most likely, you know, a free agent who's going to be out there. Nathan Peterman has a shot to be the starter on opening day. And a rookie, I think, that they would draft. But, no, I do not expect Tyrod Taylor to be the quarterback.
Yeah, I don't know if Tyrod's going to be on the team. I mean, I'm still not sold on that, but I do think he's going to be on the team through, you know, this $6 million bonus. And I think the team's going to try and maximize his value to whoever will have him and get something back for him. But, yeah, I think it's going to be a young quarterback. I don't think they're going to sign a guy like Josh McCown and plug him in. I don't think they're going to get a guy who, like Kirk Cousins, I don't think he's in the mix for the Buffalo Bills because of the number. So I do think it's going to be a young quarterback they're going to roll with. How that happens and the path that takes is really yet to be determined. I think we're getting an inkling of that the Bills aren't going to make a move until they're forced to make a move and trying to get as much value as they can from the players they have on their roster. And if that means trading Tyrod Taylor for what is maybe a seventh-round pick, a fourth-round pick, a second-round pick, a bag of footballs, whatever it is, they're going to get something for him if they can before they cut him. And because the $6 million doesn't really hurt them enough not to try and do that.
Hey, Steve, we've been doing this for a couple of weeks now, going through position group by position group, talking about who the Bills have on the roster, who is out there. Let's do it for quarterbacks. It's our last position group. What they have, what they need, quarterbacks, under contract right now, and I mean today, they have Tyrod Taylor, obviously, who played 15 games last year, 2,800 passing yards, 14 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 427 rushing yards, 4 touchdowns rushing. They have Nathan Peterman going into his second year. He played 4 games last year, got the 2 starts, 5 interceptions, obviously jumps out. They have Joe Webb on the roster, or actually as a free agent. So that's what they have. There are quarterbacks. We've looked at that list of quarterbacks out there a lot, potential free agents coming up. You know, Drew Brees' name is on there. Kirk Cousins' name is on there. Those two do not seem real likely to be Buffalo Bills in the immediate future, but there are others whose names might be out there. You've talked about Josh McCown.
I've talked about him because I know this. He's a great team. He has a reputation of being an absolutely great teammate. He has a reputation of being a good quarterback. He's a great mentor. He's been around the league for a long, long time. He's 38 years old. He's the second oldest player on that list next to Drew Brees. And he's a guy who has said he wants to move into the coaching side of football when he's all done with it. So he has that mentality for being a guy who can stand on the sidelines with a clipboard and really help on game day. Matt Moore from Miami, who's been down there for a long time, played with Ryan Tannehill. Those two guys, Ryan Tannehill, Matt Moore, have a really close relationship. Chase McDaniel, Drew Stanton. But the most intriguing guy that we don't know anything about is A.J. McCarron, who has sat behind Andy Dalton in Cincinnati for 5 years and was released by the Cincinnati Bengals because Andy Dalton's not going anywhere. Now, A.J. McCarron is a guy who exudes a lot of confidence. When he got a chance to start for an injured Dalton a few years ago for a handful of games, he was truly confident. I mean, he thought he was going to be the guy and do it. So he is a guy that wants a chance to play. He wants a chance to start. And I think that for that reason and his experience of being around a team like Cincinnati, who's been in some big moments, plays in a rough, tough division in the AFC North, he's a guy that I think is intriguing and is going to bring something to the table. Now, you don't know a lot about him, no question. But by the same token, he played at a big-time college program, and he's been in the NFL for a handful of years with a lot of good players.
So that's what the Bills have and what they need and what might be out there for them at the quarterback spot. Here's a call from Stan in West Seneca. Go ahead, Stan. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hello, sure. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hey.
I'd like to talk a little bit about Tyrod. I don't think the guy's getting a fair shake. I'd like to make 2 points. First of all, I disagree with Steve when he says he's been in the league 8-9 years. To me, he was a backup to Joe Flacco for 4 years, so you know he really started his career in Buffalo. Now, if you go back to the first year he was here, when he had competent receivers, he was balling out. He was throwing the ball 50, 60 yards in the air downfield. And, you know, he was doing well. Now, my other point is that I think it's a coaching. I mean, I know you're probably going to disagree with this, but now, Steve, you could understand this because you were not only being a phenomenal special teamers, you were above average receiver, and I don't think you got the chance to really show your wares. And to me, it's competence. 90% of sports is competence. If the coaches don't have the confidence in you, you don't have the confidence. And to me, you know, Steve, when you line up, you get a play called in for the sidelines. The coach calls a play. You practice it all week. You try to execute it to the best of your ability. Obviously, they're not letting him perform to the best of his ability. He's only trying to execute the plays that were called. And I don't think they're using it properly. And I'd like to know what you think about that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Stan, I appreciate you calling. You can disagree with me anytime you want to. You have every right to, and you may be right, and I may be wrong. But here's what you're saying, and you're the second person who's, you know, I got reached out to on Twitter, and they said, listen, in 2015, when he had Chris Hogan, Sammy Watkins, Hogan, and Robert Wood, they said, yeah, Tyrod tore it up. He was throwing the ball down the field. It was great. Well, let me tell you, in 2015, he was 23rd in the NFL in yards passing. He was 21st in TDs. He was 29th in yards passing per game. And he was number 16 in completion percentage. So when you're looking back at the 2015 year when he had all these great receivers or whoever receivers you had, and he was doing all this great stuff with his deep ball and all that, well, it wasn't that good. It was middle of the road at best and sub-middle of the road. The only thing he was middle of the road at was completion percentage. He was number 16. The rest of it was in the high 20s, early 20s and ranked in the high 20s. So Tyrod has had different offensive coordinators. He's had different coaching philosophies. He's had different players around him. He's had different types of players around him. He's had a really strong running game every single year, and yet they can't get it done. They can't get it done passing. So you can point the finger wherever you want about Tyrod not being used properly. Listen, they're asking Tyrod to do a lot of things he needs to be able to do, and he's not getting them done. And you can say what you want, no question. And you can say, you can read into what Rick Dennison's firing after this last season means. And you can read between the lines whether it was his inability to get the most out of Tyrod that caused it. Well, he can get in line because there's another couple of coordinators before him that also couldn't get it done. So I don't know how many coaches you're going to go through before you find one that can do it. But, you know, we got a football team to build, you know, don't you?
Yeah, I mean,
you got a football team to build.
You do. 3 years. You've had them for 3 years. Hey, time now for NFL True or False. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. True or False, Pittsburgh Steelers should trade wide receiver Martavis Bryant. There's been teams who have talked about being interested in that. Bryant, of course, sat out a couple of years ago, came back strong last year, 50 catches, 3 touchdowns. They have Juju Smith-Schuster on the roster now. Of course, they have the big man, Antonio Brown. Should the Steelers consider trading Martavis Bryant, true or false? I say true. Yeah, get better somewhere else.
Yeah, plus he was not happy. Right. And you don't want guys on your team that are unhappy. You've got to be sold out 100%. I alluded to that when, you know, you're thinking about benching your better quarterback and starting a rookie to find out. You just can't do that. Martavis Bryant's not happy. You got to have players that are there. And I think, yes, I think there's no question he's a great player, got a lot of ability. He's a consistent player. And you see there as he's walking around, if the viewers are looking at him, it's Antonio Bryant standing there. He's way bigger than Antonio Bryant. So he's a good-sized, quality receiver that a lot of teams would really love to have on their squad. And the Steelers, they're a team that could get something pretty valuable for Martavis Bryant. You should consider it.
Number two on NFL True or False, Kirk Cousins. We've talked about his potential landing spots as a potential free agent in a couple of weeks. What about the Dallas Cowboys? Is Cousins a serious option for the Dallas Cowboys? True, false? What do you think, Steve?
He'd be an upgrade.
Really?
He would be an upgrade from Dak Prescott. He's just a more consistent thrower of the football. He's more accurate. Certainly he has his limitations. But with a team like Dallas, he could put up some numbers that, you know, and consistent numbers, and a team that really has a lot of other things going for it. So, yeah, he'd be an upgrade. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. I don't know if Jerry Jones would make that move or not. I don't know what Jason Garrett thinks about Kirk Cousins either. They've got a very young Dak Prescott who guys love. So I'm saying false.
I was waiting for you to say true. Because I'm saying false all the way. I'm not sure how much of an upgrade he is over Dak Prescott. I think he's good. Cousins is pretty good. But is he that much of an upgade over Prescott with all the upheaval that would call? So I'm saying false, too. You talked your way all the way.
I talked my way in a complete circle.
It's not going to happen.
Actually, 180 degrees.
Not a serious option.
Yeah, I don't think it is a serious option. That doesn't mean it won't happen, but I think it's. I wouldn't go there if I was the Cowboys. They got too much going for them with Dak Prescott. And listen, Dak Prescott in a very short time has become beloved down there. He's a great guy, great teammate, great leader. The guys rally around him, and that's a lot of what you need as a quarterback.
Yeah, Cousins is going to Denver. You know that.
Going to the Jets.
Denver.
I don't know. I think the Jets are still in that mix, man.
NFL True or False brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's Artisan Cheese. Steve and I back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Greg Cosell on the show today, the man who's the analyst and producer of NFL Matchup on ESPN. Greg Cosell, we asked him about Tyrod Taylor. The report coming out late yesterday that the Bills are prepared to spend that $6 million bonus on Tyrod Taylor, keeping him on the roster after March 14th. We asked Greg Cosell about that, about Tyrod possibly staying in Buffalo.
The way it works in the NFL is it's always easy to say a quarterback is not very good or he's not exactly what you want. The issue arises, guys, if you then don't have anybody to replace him. And that's what teams face. It's always easy to say Tyrod Taylor's not the answer. And I think that the Bills know that. My guess is a lot of teams around the league would probably say he's not the long-term answer for a team at quarterback. But if you don't have one, you know that he's a professional starter. You can line him up and you can play. Now, you need a lot of other things throughout the rest of your team in order to compete. But keep one thing in mind. I believe the Bills made the playoffs this year. And who was their starting quarterback?
Yeah.
It was Tyrod Taylor.
Greg Cosell on Tyrod Taylor. We also talked with Jeff Foster today. He is the CEO of National Football Scouting, the group that puts together the scouting combine in Indianapolis next week. And Jeff Foster talked to us about where the NFL combine can get bigger, where it can grow in the future.
I see most of the growth being on the non-football side. So on the fan interaction and the media side, I think the clubs are comfortable. We did a pretty extensive review over the last 2 years in terms of our processes on the player selection, what types of testing we do, both on the medical and the psychological and the physical. As you mentioned, the draft is somewhere in the number of 255. So we feel like inviting 330 players gets us close to that number. So I don't think we'll see any growth there.
Jeff Foster on the growth of the Combine. We'll be at the Combine next week, myself and Donald Jones, next Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Our Twitter poll question today dealt with the Combine. What part of the NFL Combine should be valued most by NFL teams? What do you think? Well, on Twitter, with a ton of votes today, about half of you, more than half of you, said the one-on-one interview should be the most valuable part. 25% of you said on-field testing. 15% said medical tests. 4% said something else. I'm inclined to go with medical tests. The on-field testing, Donald, the sprints, the lifts, the agility drills, I think that's just, I don't know.
It's the Junior Olympics.
Yeah, I don't know. I bet it'd be very hard to find an NFL team that made a decision to draft a player based on what they saw on the field in Indy.
No, I mean, but what it does do is give you an idea of where they compare to other guys in that class.
Yeah.
You know the guy's got physical abilities. He's going to be able to stand out on an NFL field and compete for a spot. You can't – and that's the great problem with football. You can't get better at football unless you play football. And if you play football, it's too dangerous just to practice playing. You got to get ready in some other way. And that's why it's hard to evaluate how these guys are going to be, because it's the old argument. These guys may look great standing there in gym shorts, but when you put pads and helmets on, they evaporate. And that's what they're trying to fight out. But they never will by getting them to jump around in gym shorts.
Right. We got combine coverage coming up next week. Donald and I will be back here next Tuesday for the show right here in Orchard Park.
I want a full report on the quarterbacks now.
We'll get there for you. And yeah, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we'll be coming to you live from the NFL Scouting Combine, myself and Donald Jones. Steve, thanks for this. Thanks for coming in the last few days.
That was great. I really appreciate it. It was fun.
Yeah, it was good to have you in here. Thanks to Steve Tasker. As far as Bills news, not much today. They are not planning to cut Tyrod Taylor, according to Ian Rappaport of NFL.com. The Bills are okay paying that $6 million roster bonus for Tyrod Taylor, keeping him on the roster for now. We'll see where that goes. And one other NFL note today, Marcus Peters, very talented young cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, is going to be traded away to the Los Angeles Rams. No word yet on what's going back the other way. Peters, their first-round draft pick in 2015, scheduled to make $1.7 million this season. Now he's going to be a Los Angeles Ram. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants, J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Kelly Rood, our producer, Jay Harris. We will see you Tuesday at 12 noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.